of a trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, to be precise. The scientists say that the U.S. space probe has seen the moment when the entire universe went from subatomic size to its present state in less than the blink of an eye. The probe examined light that has been traveling across the universe for over 13 billion years. I'm Bruce Birch, and that's the news from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Now, Head-On with Bob Kincaid. Head-On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to tonight's Thursday night edition of Head On. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid, college basketball fan. And I say that for a reason. I don't do a lot of cultural stuff on, hey, did you see the Sopranos? Yeah, I'm not there for it. I'm a geek, okay? I am a total political, social American geek. Got my eyes on the prize, mostly. But I do like to tell you, there are a few things. I admit it, I took the night off for the Sugar Bowl when my beloved Mountaineers gut stomped the Georgia Bulldogs, and I loved every blessed second of it, especially the lovely Bulldog fans in the stands going, and you could read their, "Oh my God! What are them hillbillies doing to us? Sakes, I've got the vapors." I like March Madness. Billy Packer notwithstanding. I mean, there's just so much Mike Krzyzewski worship a guy can stand in 1 2-week period of time. But I do. I mean, in years past, total junkie for it. Sit there with my little brackets and, took a lick there. And I still fill out my brackets and I enjoy it. And I'm probably boring you to tears even as we speak. But there's a point to all of this. And that is that in the coward nation, in George Bush's coward United States, you're not allowed to sit back and enjoy a damn basketball game. Now, of course, I'm following my Mountaineers. They'll play tomorrow at 2:45 Eastern. They're taking on the Southern Illinois University. And I'm all psyched for that, but I was excited because the Alabama Crimson Tide was taking on Marquette this afternoon out in San Diego at the Cox Arena. And what do I find out while I'm sitting there watching the Wisconsin Green Bay just gut smack Oklahoma, which is always fun. Watching Oklahoma lose anything, I'm up for. Tom Coburn. See how bad it is with me? You see how I've gotten? I associate everything with politics and political choices. But that's okay. Somebody's got to be that way. Right now, as far as I'm concerned, the only redeeming grace in Oklahoma has to do with one of our listeners, a scientist there, and Bart Kopp. But that's a different issue. What I'm getting at though is the story that, I'm watching the basketball, my dad's in the Lazy Boy. I'm sitting there on the couch. We're watching. Greg Gumbel comes on CBS and he says, "We've got breaking information that the arena, the Cox Arena at San Diego, has been evacuated. Bomb sniffing dogs have discovered something, a suspicious package." And Dad and me, we just looked at each other and said, "Oh, hell." And I looked at Dad, and I said, "You know what it is, Dad?" And he said, "What's that, boy?" And I said, one of those German shepherds has figured out that there's an eight-week-old half-rotten weenie behind a corner, behind the corner of a counter somewhere, and damn well wants it. And we kind of had a little chuckle. And then you could go over to CNN, and there's, Darren Kagan? No, not Darren Kagan. One of the other fabulous CNN afternoon anchor people. And they've got the helicopter flyover video, and there's all these people standing around outside. Well, we don't know what the explosive device might be. And again, I looked over at my dad, and I said, it's a weenie. I'm not kidding. This was the nature of the conversation. So a little bit later, and we don't know when the Alabama Crimson Tide will take on Marquette. Obviously, the game will be delayed, blah, 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 blah. So it was maybe an hour later, I think. Well, I was watching the Boston College Pacific game, which was a darn fine game if you're a basketball fan. Exciting, two overtimes. Wrong team won it as far as I was concerned, but mostly I root for the underdog in the tournament anyway. anybody but Duke. So, because they're practically pro. So anyway, I come back here and I'm working on stories for tonight and so forth. And I think it was I went over to Reuters. And story number two, link number two was, well, how'd they put it? A basketball arena evacuated over bomb scare. And I went in and I read the story. And I jumped up like something had bitten me, and Agnes working at her workstation said, what's the matter, Bob? And I didn't talk. I didn't say anything. I just ran into the living room where Dad was. I said, Dad, we were right. It was a weenie o' death. It was a doom doggy. With extra mustard and kraut. And it was. Now, you got to remember, I did the top of the hour newscast for, was it Fourth Estate or All Things Reconsidered last weekend, where I had the story about the FBI wants you to know that if you go to a college basketball game, you might be blown to bits. The FBI also admits that they have no credible evidence whatsoever to suggest that that might be true. That was put out last weekend. The FBI said going to a college basketball game at the Big Dance, the NCAA tournament, may be dangerous to your health because Al-Qaeda hates the three-point shot. No, really? I mean, no, the FBI warned people that they could be blown up for going to a basketball game, and then in the same breath they said, but we don't have any evidence of that or anything, so go about your business. Thank you, citizen. And I had that in the newscast last week, and it was just so unutterably stupid because, of course, we've been turned into just hopeless cynics by the last five long, miserable years of George Rotten Bush. And so, consequently, when we hear terror alert, we look to the poll numbers. Well, hell's bells, he's at 33%. Of course there's a terror alert. Something's probably going to blow up. After all, on September the 10th, 2001, he was at 38%. By the end of September the 11th, 2001, he was at 93%. And he's sitting there, you know what I got in my brackets, Carl? In my bracket, I've got the field house at Auburn Hills, Michigan, blowing straight to Mars. That's what I got in my bracket. And there it was. And there it was. And I'm reading the story. And you know how it is with these bomb-sniffing dogs. They're doing their security sweep at 9:30 in the morning, the Pacific time. And the dog handler for the Department of Homeland Security. Jesus, I can't believe I'm telling this story. This can't be America! And the bomb-sniffing dog stops at the hot dog cart. And instead of going, no, Fido, no snacks till you're done looking for the Arab bombs, the dog handler goes, I think we have a threat here. We've got a threat by the hot dog stand. Hey, roger that. Threat by the hot dog stand. Bring in the robot.
They brought in a freaking robot. No, I'm not kidding you. They brought in a robot and remotely disassembled some little old dude's hot dog stand on the concourse at Cox Arena in San Diego, California.
That's clear. We found the terrorist hot dog. The terrorist hot dog will be held in a secure, undisclosed location at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. In fact, it does appear to be a chicken and pork hot dog, so we will be using it to coerce information from Arab terrorists held at Guantanamo.
That's the point. Does anybody think? I was talking about it last night. Jesus, God! Anybody with a couple of those all-night-long 12, 14-hour sessions of playing Risk, half-drunk with a bunch of your college buddies... Oh, no. I've got Kamchatka. You're screwed, buddy. You know, anybody who's done that can look at Bush administration foreign policy and go, you're not making it past the third roll of the dice, buddy. You're screwed up. And anybody with a half a lick of common sense can understand that Osama, nor none of his incredibly devout, fundamentalist, Muslim, whacked out of their mind religious believers would get anywhere near a hot dog stand. Because hot dogs are made of, except for the Hebrew national ones, and they're not going to be fooling with those.
Pork!
Pork!
No,
because, you know, I mean, there's certain things you can do and go and you fly away, I'll fly away, oh Allah, I'll fly away. Now, touching pork ain't one of them. You can blow up, and I'm not talking about mainstream Islam. I'm talking about the really, really weird fundamentalist Islams, you know, like Wahhabism. You know, Wahhabism is to Islam what Southern Baptists are to Christianity. I'm talking about the really, really crazy ones. You can blow up 3,000 people and still you get your 72 virgins and a ride to paradise. But if you touch pork in the process, your ass fries. But none of this, not one little bitty, itsy bitsy tiny hot dog bite of this enters into the equation for Agent Fred, Homeland Security dog handler outside the hot dog stand at the Cox Arena in San Diego, California. No, this was damn. This is scripted. I'm sorry, I don't mean to have a hissy, but this pisses me off. Sure, we've got a military that says we did not blow up four babies, we only blew up one, and that's okay. This is where we are! And I was so glad to have Mike Malloy back on the air last night. I love to listen to Mike after my program goes off. And God, I love his passion. And I was afraid he was going to give birth to a bouncing baby aneurysm talking about the atrocities that we're committing in Iraq. Slaughtering babies and obfuscating about whether it was one baby blown to bits or four. That's where we are. And it drives me crazy. And so, you know, I get these emails that say, hey, Bob, gotta lighten up, buddy. You need some downtime. You need to take some time away. You need to relax. Do something that you enjoy. Go throw the baseball with the boy or something. It was kind of rainy here today. We didn't get to do that. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm ahead of the game. I've done most of my research. I did it deliberately so I could go in and sit down with my 81-year-old father and watch a damn basketball game, and I got to be assaulted by the terror president. And honest to Jesus, it pisses me off. A basketball game. This isn't some cheesy science fiction thriller with a blimp full of TNT flying over the Super Bowl. This... But they told me a week ago. Why was I surprised?
We're going to scare the living daylights out of you with a hot dog at the Cox Arena in San Diego. Be afraid, America. Be very, very afraid.
Jesus! It was a great day of basketball. Tomorrow's going to be a great day of hoops. I wonder...
We have found traces of sarin gas at the nacho stand. Is that what we get tomorrow? Oh, I'm sorry. It turns out it's ricin, and it's not ricin. It's a drop of castor oil that little Billy got for not being a good boy in the stands. Ha!
This is where we are. We are part of the coward nation. We are the terrified states of America. Or at least that's what they want us to be.
More poll numbers are out today. 57% of the American people now recognize that... is it 57, 53? I don't know. A majority of Americans now recognize that George Bush's war against the innocent, unarmed people of Iraq is immoral. 43 or 47% still think it's okay to equivocate over whether you blew up one baby or four or a dozen or 50,000. It's okay, because George is doing it. I'm sorry. I apologize. I let things get away. I do.
But a basketball game. I mean, was it back up. We talk about journalism issues from time to time on this program because I have from time to time been a professional journalist.
Now, I don't hold myself out to be one now. I am apparently a yelling and raging maniac over a freaking hot dog right now, and I'm doing it professionally. But I have been a professional journalist, and I remember the lessons that I was taught as a professional journalist.
And I look, whether it was Greg Gumbel or the babbling woman on CNN or the babbling woman on MSNBC or the babbling woman on Fox, was it necessary to say,
bomb-sniffing dogs discovered a suspicious package inside Cox Arena in San Diego?
Was that necessary? What purpose does it serve to say that? Everybody had been evacuated. Okay? There was no one there.
They were rolling Robbie the Robot in to disassemble the hot dog stand. Warning, warning, Will Robinson. Rancid relish, rancid relish. Warning!
And nothing happened. So the question I would put to you is, whose agenda does it serve to crank it out all over the United States of America
that a bomb-sniffing dog has discovered a suspicious package inside Cox Arena in San Diego where they're going to play the first round of the NCAA basketball tournament? Whose agenda does that serve? Of course, I'm talking to smart people. I'm talking to informed people. Perceptive people, people with a sense of perspective. I'm talking to Democrats, I'm talking to liberals and progressives. And you know whose agenda it serves to talk about suspicious
package. Did I mention to you, did I tell you, the suspicious package was a box of, that was only described as condiments? But you know how it is. You know,
a lot of us we've worked with that kind of food and stuff because we've worked on that end of the pay scale and the food chain. It's and for those of us who haven't, you know, you've been by the 7-Eleven or whatever, and you've gotten the little package of ketchup or the little package of mustard or the relish or the mayonnaise or whatever. Fido apparently doesn't care much for mustard. I mean, of all the condiments, the most pungent would certainly be mustard, wouldn't it? And he stopped and smelled it. Because, and you know, we don't have the sense of smell of a dog. A hot dog cart for a dog must be like a rainbow is for us. Oh, God, there's chicken smell and pork smell. Bacon, 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 bacon. I smell bacon! Whose agenda does it serve to tell us that a dog is suspicious of a box of French's prepackaged yellow mustard? Is that the liberal agenda? Is that the homosexual agenda? No, I'd say that's the, come on, help me with it. It's hanging up over the rim. Let's stay with the basketball metaphor. It's over the rim. Jam it home, friends and neighbors. It's the Rovian agenda. Hell yes, it's the Rovian agenda. Hot dogs of doom. Tell you what, let's take a break. This is Head On. You know the phone number, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line.
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
He's a man who just loves conservatives, baked, broiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Okay, all better now, I think. I just felt kind of cheated. You know, I don't miss out much on doing this program. I think maybe, what, 2-3 times since we started up in October? I don't do vacations. I don't do downtime. And I'm not tooting my own trumpet. I don't do days off. I go 7 days a week because I believe in what I'm doing. And if I want to take a couple of hours and go and hang out with my dad and watch a little hoops with him, I think I've got a right to do it without deliberate attempts on the part of the damn Bush administration to ruin it for me. You know, it was shortly after September 11th, 2001, about 6 miles from where I sit now. Every year we have the largest single-day festival in West Virginia. It's called Bridge Day. And it's a hell of a lot of fun, if you're into that kind of thing. Just once, everybody ought to walk out on an 876-foot-high span and watch people jump off of it with parachutes in their hands. Just once, you should see that. It's pretty neat. And after September 11th, 2001, you got to understand, the economy around here lives and dies on Bridge Day. And after September 11th, 2001, it was handed out, well, there will be no Bridge Day this year. And in the business sector, the restaurants, all kinds of people, hotels in the Fayetteville, West Virginia area, and all the way to Oak Hill and Summersville, all took a huge multi-thousand-dollar, probably multi-million-dollar hit because after September 11th, the powers that be were so terrified that they were sure that if Osama bin Laden could have people fly planes into the World Trade Center, that surely to God, a 4-lane bridge in West Virginia was next. Now, I know. Wrap your mind around that one. I've never been so ashamed of my country as I am now. I'm ashamed for the god-awful, bloodthirsty, immoral things that we do, and I am ashamed for the cowardice that we exhibit at home. But of course, coward comes with the turf when you're being ostensibly led by a Bush, because there's not a brave bone in a single one of them's body. The only bravery a Bush can exhibit is, I dare you to drink that bad tequila. That's that cheap $10 bottle stuff. I dare you to drink that. That's as good as it gets. I mean, he got so damn scared he wouldn't even go up in his little trainer jet anymore when he was in the Texas Air National Guard for 5 or 6 days or whatever it was. That's where we are. And it's where I don't want to be. And I am damn well going to live my life without that kind of fear. Maybe that's part of the example that we as liberals and progressives set for the rest of this terrified Chihuahua nation, trembling under the bed during a thunderstorm. I mean, no, I'm not going to hammer on it anymore. But just by living our lives, could we as liberals set an example for poor, petrified, terrified, right-wing, mouth-breathing, strychnine-drinking, snake-handling, the Republican chihuahuas? Could we do that? I can. I'm pretty sure you can, too. You know, I refuse to think that somebody means to kill me because their skin's a little darker than mine. I don't want any part of the terror that's been, you know, oh God, it was a great science fiction book by an author named Philip K. Dick. Stop snickering. This is the same guy who gave us Do Robots Dream of Electric Sheep? And the story that Minority Report was based on, Great, just great, great science fiction. And he wrote one called A Scanner Darkly, and it centered upon a futuristic drug trade. And in that time, the drugs that were sold were pure manifestations of emotion, from anger to joy to whatever. And you know, never mind the plot. The idea that you would sell drugs that are the manifestation of emotions. That's where we are now. Only, you know, we haven't quite gotten to the point where it's injectable or snortable or smokable. What we have now is a situation where it's broadcastable. And it's transmittable. And the number one drug in America isn't crack, and it's not meth. God knows it's not pot. Alcohol and nicotine are probably pretty close. But the number one drug in America, the number one drug in America is fear. Fear drives America. And it is going to drive us to our ruin if we don't get a handle on our habit. I hate to talk like that, but it's true. You know it's true, and I know it's true, because that's all I can do with this program is truth and facts. I don't have time, and you don't have time, for me to sugarcoat it or put it to you any other way but straight up. Let's go to Andrew. Haven't heard from Andrew in a while. Hey, Andrew, you're head on.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Doing okay, I guess.
Yeah. I was missing in action, if you will. Furnace went up, and I had to put a new furnace in, so been kind of busy the last couple of days.
Oh, that had to be fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was great. But just wanted to call up on the hot dog scare. I don't get it. Fear, like you said, fear is all they got. That's all the Bush administration has is fear.
And we're down to being scared of weenies.
Yeah. We're down to being scared of hot dog carts. I mean, if people can't see through this, it's a shame. I mean, it's the same old stuff day after day, fear-mongering. They come out with these airstrikes in Iraq today.
Oh, God, I know.
And I heard on Air America, I was listening to Randy Rhodes, and she said there was a report that came out that the Pentagon didn't know about it and the president didn't know about it. So
what?
Yeah, I have yet. I've been looking on the Internet trying to find the piece, but they said the Pentagon denied that they knew anything about the airstrikes. And the president said he didn't know. Bush said he didn't know about it either.
Well, I did notice one thing, Andrew, with regard to this Operation Swarmer.
Yeah.
Oh, God, who's titling this crap? I did notice one thing with regard to it. It started out the way I saw it first described. It was, you know, the massive American airstrikes, the greatest air power display since the beginning of the war. And all of a sudden, the characterization of it changed. Because when you hear airstrike, what do you think, Andrew?
I think of bombing.
Yeah. Bombs, missiles, mud huts blown into their original dust.
Mm-hmm.
And after yesterday's less than good story for American PR about, you know, dropping bombs on and tank shells on mud huts and mm-hmm. killing 11 people in them, suddenly that didn't play so well.
No.
And so the next thing you see is a recharacterization of the story, Andrew, and it's like footage out of Apocalypse Now with the wave after wave of attack helicopter with our brave soldiers, and they are brave.
Yes, they are brave, but they don't have any leadership, and
you know, but it's not rocket gunships, and it's not F-16s howling over a target and dropping smart bombs on mud huts anymore.
Bomb.
No. No, now it's you know, all the whole Wagnerian, you know, da 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 da, da and mm-hmm. you know, the troops coming in.
Yep, and it's just like they said in one report I was reading in the BBC. They were saying like, oh, these aren't the guided missiles; these are just regular dumb bombs. We're just dropping them.
Some bombs. What are you doing here? Nothing to see. Move along. Just dropping some bombs.
Exactly. Collateral damage. Oh, well, we're getting the insurgents.
Yeah.
It's such BS, and it's just sickening, and it's tired, and it's old.
Well, and the other part of this, Andrew, I think, is that the American people, part of the, I don't know, maybe I've got a talent for sort of crawling around in the dim, dark, and fetid recesses of the Rovian mind, but I imagine they gotten to the point where they think the American people are tired of hearing about soldiers being blown up by IEDs. They don't think we want our soldiers home, Andrew. They think that we want our soldiers to march into battle, whistling. You know, but doing the rebel yell and playing drums and stuff.
It's just another deflection, you know. Just
yeah.
To, you know, divert attention. And just like you said, it's like our soldiers over there, and they're doing an admirable job. They completed their mission. They removed Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
They were victorious.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't supposed to be there in the first place because, you know, he took us there on a lie.
Right.
But they did complete their mission, and it's time to bring them home. And
yeah, mission accomplished. You can come home now.
Yeah, mission's been accomplished, you know, and it has. They captured Saddam Hussein. He's on trial, but it's time to bring the kids home, you know. It's like those guys are just over there now just because, you know, the Bush administration wants them over there.
But they want to, you know, they're desperate to make it look like we're really fighting a war instead of just walking around being targets.
That's it. That's it. And it was very interesting yesterday about the gentleman you had on, and he was talking about how all our National Guards are over there and our equipment's over there, and how it's basically going to be useless because with all the sand and, you know, the high temperatures and wind storms and everything else, I mean, we won't be able to, we'll be using our hands if we had a, you know, natural disaster over here to try and rescue people because we won't have any equipment.
Yeah, filling sandbags with shovels and hoping for the best.
Yeah, it's sickening and, you know, it's repugnant and I just can't take it. I'm detested by it. So
yeah. I hope I don't get people down by being the way I am, Andrew. Because
no, it's like, well, you know, you gotta say the truth is not always pretty. So 9 times out of 10, it's not pretty.
You know, and I just want to watch a hoops game.
Yeah.
Once in a while, I want to.
What happened there? Oh, we got a bomb scare. Oh. You know, I'm just like, when I saw that, I was like, that is Karl Rove, and you know, that's it. I was like, that's such BS. It's just BS.
Yeah.
I mean, this administration is full of BS. And
well, and what I resent most out of it, I think, Andrew, is the assumptions. In order to put that kind of crap together, they have to make very basic assumptions about the gullibility and the stupidity of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you think of it, I think of it. Most hot dogs are made of pork, and you know, Osama's buddies wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Exactly, and animals have a greater sense of smell than we have. I mean, I open up a can of tuna, and my cats can be sleeping upstairs, and they'll be right down there.
Hey, you having tuna? I like tuna.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
yeah, they'll be right there. They'll be sleeping, and then all of a sudden I'll open it up, and boom.
Oh, yeah. The dog can spot opening food. I mean, they have individual molecule food receptors in their noses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They can hear just by you breaking the seal on the can.
Yeah.
You know, but they can hear it.
But they assume we're so stupid, Andrew, that we won't come to that conclusion all by ourselves.
Yeah, I guess they think they really dumbed us down, and I think they have. To some extent, but not us.
Not us.
It's on Head On Radio.
No, we're on the ball, man.
Yes.
All right.
Stay on top of it.
Take care, Andrew. Right, so good to hear from you.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye now. And Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're Head On. Yo, Bob. Put Bob back on hold. You there, Bob?
Yeah.
No, okay. All right, and Rick in Florida. Hey, Rick, you're Head On.
How you doing tonight, Bob?
Oh, well, it's just a silly day.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about where we are and about books, sci-fi books, and I hate to be so obvious, but to me, it's like Brave New World. I mean, everybody's been trained to be some part of the echelon. They've been purposely dumbed down or raised up.
Yeah.
And everybody's attending the feelies.
Well,
nobody seems to care other than just getting that buzz, doing the little golf thing and attending the feelies and taking a little Soma, and everything is just wonderful on America today.
It is.
In the meantime, Dateline March the 15th, 2006, as I know you already know and many of your listeners know, according to Reuters, in Tikrit, 11 members of an Iraqi family were killed by the U.S.
Yep.
Our heroes. Our heroes. And this document has since expired, and more updates have come along that prove that even right down to a seventh-month-old baby,
yep,
the hands were wire-tied behind the baby's back. And
No. I missed that part.
This baby was shot in the back of the head, like all the other children. These people were executed when questioned and could not give the proper answers.
They didn't have the password.
Well, as I said, it's out there, and that's exactly what's being reported.
Oh, my God. You know, when I had the story yesterday, Rick, it was 11 people were killed, and the aircraft fire and the tank fire caused the roof to collapse on them.
No. Major Ali Aman of the Iraqi police force said U.S. forces had landed on the roof of the house in the early hours and shot the 11 occupants, including the 5 children. After they left the house, they blew it up, he said. Another policeman, Colonel Fakhrukh Hussein, said autopsies had been carried out at Chikrit Hospital and found all the victims had gunshot wounds to the head right down to the seventh-month-old baby. The bodies, their hands bound, had been dumped in one room before the house was destroyed, Hussein said. Police had found spent American-issue cartridges in the rubble. It's a, quote, it's a clear and perfect crime without any doubt, he said.
That's
our heroes. And they're coming back here, you know. They're coming back here to be your policemen.
What have we done to them?
Taylor.
No, Rick, what have we done to them to make them willing to engage in that kind of behavior?
Perhaps an all-voluntary force is a slave to the wage, just like Caligula found out that all he had to say was 12 more pieces of gold, and they would even arrest an innocent man and kill him. Perhaps they are in it for the money, and that makes them mercenary. Perhaps they are professional soldiers, which is akin to the mercenary, the professional soldier, who serves no cause.
Are you making an argument for a conscript army?
Yes, I am. I certainly am. At this point, I am, because that's when these types of wars end. Because if you can take away every single deferment possible, the way Rangel wanted to do, these wars end. This murder ends. You cannot have people that are motivated by money and career and advancement serving at the barrel of a gun. You just can't do it. Because they will follow every order. They don't find. There's no such thing as an unlawful order with these people. And they're renegade. And they're all, and right now they're very privileged. Very privileged.
Why? I mean, no. I mean, you understand, Rick, that the idea that American troops would bind a seven-month-old's hands and put a bullet in its head, you understand that that militates against every bit of common sense that I have about me, don't you?
Lieutenant Kelly.
Yeah, but there were 30 and 40. I mean, how many people were there at My Lai?
We had to destroy the village to save it. McNamara and the other.
But why do you bind a seven-month-old's hands?
Programming. Programming. That's why you do it. You see, it is the most extreme indifference. It is extreme prejudice. There is no thinking. It's robotic. It's automated. You're just carrying it out. You don't think about it. You're doing a job. This is what the job is.
Because when you go through that business where they teach you about, you don't have to, and you know, we're talking about an 18-year-old kid or so, right? And the unit on you don't have to obey an illegal order is somewhere after the 15-mile run.
Yeah.
And also, somewhere before the shoveling the sand pit from point A to point B.
And it's also somewhere after you see your fellow grunts go to prison, go to Leavenworth for following orders or not following orders. because they get hung out to dry like they did at Abu Ghraib. You see that? You're an indentured slave. These people are on third time, fourth time, and now fifth time stop loss. They just moved in 7,000 more guys. Not one relieved anybody.
No, they were just they were there to prop up the opening of the parliament today.
Yeah. Nobody relieved anybody that's been on a damn stop loss. I mean, guys that have played the odds so many times are crazy. That's the way it works. You get into combat, you get short, you're going home, you beat the odds. And every time somebody takes that away, they're raising they're like doubling and tripling, quadrupling the odds against you that you won't make it out. Then you get into death wish. Then you get into tyranny. You don't have any laws. You don't follow command. You kill officers through fragging them. You do all of these things because you've got no hope. You're not going to survive. You're walking dead.
And everybody that isn't you or your buddies is the enemy.
That's right. And the only thing they can do is very much like very, very relevant. I mean, I'm sure that Gunny Bob can testify to this. Is that when them Marines looked down at a fallen comrade and an animal said, better you than me, that's what they get. That's what it comes to. There's nothing left. They're not getting out of this alive. So now how do you manage it? How do you live day to day? Well, then you start becoming potentates and you start becoming justice.
Well, see, Rick, I mean, I'm tempted to engage in a little bit of that historical perspective that bores some and others enjoy. There was a time when Rome would send its legions, and oddly enough, it was exactly where ours are now, and they'd just keep them there. And they'd sit there, and the legionnaires would sit there, and, well, you know, next year maybe we get to go home to Rome.
That's right.
And they never got to go home. They were just left there, as an attempt at a garrison.
They were a walking carcass. And they knew it. And that creates a freedom from conscience, a freedom from diligence, a freedom from character. It puts you in that state of mind of flight or fight. It puts you in that state of mind that I am better than you because I got the gun. The only thing that matters, I'm not going home. I'm not going to see my baby. I'm not going to see my wife. I'm in this to the very end. So now you, the enemy, has put me in this mess. It's you. And that's when you start cutting the ears off and making necklaces. That's when you start burning down villages to save them. That's when you start behaving like a barbarian. Because the rule of law has left you. Therefore, you hold no allegiance to it. And that is called being marooned.
Well, it was bad enough yesterday when the equivocation was between whether or not we killed one baby or five.
Yeah, I know. Imagine that.
You know, it's
better if we only killed one. It's better.
Right. That's acceptable.
You know, and I remember,
and I don't want to cross the street and shake hands with somebody who thinks like that. I don't want to sit down and break bread with them. I don't want to have Christian fellowship with them. No.
But listen to what he did. Well, listen to what they did after.
Well, I know that what you're telling me from
Timothy McVeigh was framed for the Murrah building. He turned around and did an interview on TV, and he used the phrase collateral damage, and all the media rebuffed, nearly vomited. Now they use it every day like it's nothing.
Yeah, because they're brown.
Yeah, they're brown, all right.
You know, they don't speak good English.
I think who was it? Matthews said after 2 weeks into the war, he said, we're all neocons now.
Yeah, I know. I know. And this makes me sick.
I know.
I really want that Reuters report to be wrong. I want that policeman to have some sort of a grudge. And so he made up the part about the 7-month-old's hands being tied behind their backs.
They quoted the other one, too, and also the doctor. All three of those guys probably got an accident. That's what it is.
I would like
and the Reuters.
You understand, Rick? I would like that. I would like for that to be the case.
Well, everybody would like it to be the case, but see, that's what we keep doing.
I know. All reality spoken
keeps,
here.
America yeah. keeps trying to make lemons out of lemonade, and sooner or later, you're covered with urine. You know, you can't do it. This is what it really is. This is a blood and guts war. This is urban war. This is door-to-door war. This is war that
we did not understand 30 years ago, or 35, 40 years ago, and it is war that we do not understand now.
That's right. You got civvies all over the place, and everybody looks the same. They used to say, Arvin is Arvin. You used to see him coming and going. Right, Gunny Bob, call in. He'll tell you. And that's you couldn't tell one from the other. So the snipes and everybody would just pop anyone they see it towards the end. He's Viet Cong. Can you tell? I don't know. He's from the country. Chief's from the country. The little kid's from the country. The water buffalo's from the country. You know?
Yeah.
The rice is from the country.
Well, and this thing, well, we're running out of time, but this thing that's happening today north of Samara, 1,500 American troops, 50 or more helicopters, you know, I guess Wagner screaming from the speakers. They're going into houses. It's not like they've found the secret fort.
No, they're kicking doors down. They're behaving like the Romans, like mercenaries, like mercs. Like they did down in Louisiana.
I know.
This is a bad situation. And just remember, these fellas are coming back here. Okay? They're coming back here. This is what's ruling them. And they're going to be working in your community. And they'll probably be your cops and your jailers and who knows what else, your postmen. Who knows? But they're coming back here. And they've done these things. And it's going to get real deadly and dangerous.
And here's the fun part. We don't have services for them when it begins to haunt them.
No, there won't be nothing for them. It'd be just like NAMM. There won't be anything for them until somebody does a terrible thing, a whole bunch of them. And then they'll throw some money at them.
And then we'll start making movies about it.
Yeah, we'll make movies about it. They'll end up under a bridge drinking themselves to death and collecting a little check, and everything will be just fine.
Oh, God almighty. We got to get out of here,
We're
Rick.
Back there again.
Yeah, I'm afraid we are.
Hey, Republicans, how's this working out for you?
Yeah, I know.
See you later, guys. Bye.
Later, Rick. Yeah, how's it working out for you? This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't face myself. Don't run back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore.
Head On.
Hi, I'm Bruce Hornsby. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, it certainly is true in music. And practicing music is one of the most valuable ways a student can spend his time, or her time. A young person who studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All qualities kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. Parents, think about encouraging your kids to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that they really like, the one that really clicks for them. Get to know the school's music teacher and encourage your child to join school music ensembles. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
I'm Bruce Birch, and here are the headlines from the Head On Radio Network. With George Bush's poll numbers falling like spring rain, the Pentagon announced a new offensive in Iraq today. Operation Swarmer is the largest air offensive of Bush's three-year war against Iraq. More than 50 aircraft and 1,000 soldiers descended upon a rural area near Samarra in advance of the opening of Iraq's parliament. With the targets being residential, more civilian casualties are expected. The raid came amid plummeting American sentiments about the possibility of the U.S. winning the war. A new CNN USA Today Gallup poll shows Americans much more pessimistic about the outcome of George Bush's war. Fully 60% of those surveyed understand that things aren't going well in Iraq. 55% had the common sense to realize that Iraq is sliding towards civil war. Only 47% of Americans now approve of Bush's slaughter in Iraq on a moral basis. Amid growing American disillusionment with Bush's Iraq war, the White House is still forging ahead. The Bush administration released its National Security Strategy paper today. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley still claims that George Bush has the right to make war on any country of his choosing at any time. The most hair-raising part of the report is the portion that maintains George Bush may still start a war against Iran. And of course, another side effect of low Bush poll numbers is increased government terror warnings. The Cox Arena in San Diego was cleared today before NCAA tournament basketball games. Authorities reported their bomb-sniffing dogs discovered a suspicious package in the arena, causing the evacuation. The suspicious package turned out to be a package of condiments outside a hot dog stand. They're getting better at spotting suspicious hot dog stands, but the Department of Homeland Security still has a long way to go. That's the latest from a report detailing the department's failings in dealing with taxpayer dollars. The department's inspector general says that 20% of the money Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff handed out for port security had nothing to do with preventing a bomb from coming into one of America's many vulnerable ports. The White House is very excited about its new Homeland Security Center for faith-based initiatives. Iraqi resistance to the American occupation is apparently contagious. The top commander in Afghanistan says devices being used in that pathetic country show signs of influence from Iraqi bomb makers. General Benjamin Freakley said today that his command is still trying to figure out how the Afghanis got the Iraqi technology. This is news from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children has doubled, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children will use them. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
An American company has poisoned several British citizens. Paraxyl, a company from the U.S., administered human tests of a new drug that has critically poisoned several people in the U.K. The drug was designed to fight autoimmune disorders and leukemia. Instead, it has left at least two young people near death. The British government has halted the tests run for German drug maker Tegenero and sent warnings about the drug worldwide. The state of Illinois is suing a nuclear power company for putting poison in the water. The state served papers on Exelon today for spilling millions of gallons of water laced with tritium into Illinois waterways. Tritium is a poisonous radioactive element. It got into the water when Exelon had a series of accidents at its Braidwood plant that sent the poison water into the ground around the plant. Exelon says it broke no laws. Halliburton is admitting it nearly poisoned our troops. In a report released Thursday, the giant war profiteer confessed that it failed to assemble and use its own water purification equipment at an American military installation outside Ramadi in Iraq. Halliburton's report says that it pumped filthy, polluted water straight out of the Euphrates River into the camp. The Bush administration has no intention of doing a thing about the near disaster. housing starts are down. Federal government data shows construction of new homes decreased by 7.9% from January. Although construction is still going up, home purchases have also begun to fall. Economists say that the housing market can't tolerate that kind of imbalance for long. In a report that's bound to drive religious fundamentalists to distraction, NASA scientists announced Thursday that they've looked back in time to an instant right after the Big Bang, 1/1,000,000,000 of a second after the Big Bang, to be precise. The scientists say that the U.S. space probe has seen the moment when the entire universe went from subatomic size to its present state in less than the blink of an eye. The probe examined light that has been traveling across the universe for over 13 billion years. I'm Bruce Birch, and that's the news from the Horn, the head-on radio network.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, let's do another hour. Your phone calls are welcome, of course, at 877, the number 4, head-on, 877-443-2366. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. And sometimes things, yeah, we have a little fun with things. Sometimes things, they're not so funny after all.
It would not be difficult, my Führer. Nuclear reactors could... I'm sorry, Mr. President. Nuclear reactors could provide power almost indefinitely. Greenhouses could maintain plant life. Animals could be bred and slaughtered.
I just love the way he says, slaughtered! Because, you know, that's how they say it right there in Washington, D.C. 7-month-old babies were slaughtered! Agnes, I'm sorry, honey. You shake your head no. Yeah, the baby was killed, yeah.
Yes, I know, Bob.
And turn away? You going to turn away? You going to pretend it didn't happen by not looking at it?
No, I see it every day. Thank you very much.
Wasn't speaking to you, dear.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
We can't turn away. Part of the survey that came out, the CNN Gallup poll, USA Today survey, there's still, like I said, there's still 43-47% of the American people that think this is a moral war. Of course, I think they're on acid for thinking that any war is moral, but, you know, that's me. Let's go to the phones. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Let's see if he's back with us. You there, Bob?
You want a gunny Bob, huh?
Just old. Bob's what I got.
Old Bob, yeah? Well, I'm old and been there, done that. The sad thing my people have come to.
Well, let me just ask you a straight question.
All right.
We all know that my least favorite word in the English language is the word believe.
And?
But the question I would like to put to you, Bob, do you believe?
No.
A 7-month-old with its hands bound behind its back?
Do I believe it?
Yeah.
I know it. You want, like Rick said, why didn't Gunny Bob get on, okay? And
well, you were there, you were on hold, and I knew it.
And something happened, and we got bumped. And I still want them boys out there in D.C. to come visit me, but they don't, you know?
Yeah.
And I can go anywhere on this continent or any other continent and walk onto the base and they just let me go and I can shop in a commissary. I can do whatever I want to do there. I can even talk to the troops. And most people can't because you don't talk to the troops. You don't talk to those that have been there. No, of course not. But getting back to that, I just wanted to tell you, last night I laid down with my lady and You know, I was talking to her about a talking chihuahua, okay?
Yeah.
Or maybe a gecko, you know, or maybe a talking dog with beans. Oh, that's right. That's what started it. It had something to do with bush beans and them delicious bush beans. On the back of the SUV, there's a sign in the window about the delicious bush beans. And everybody believes that animals talk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so why can't you believe that a snake talks to, I don't know, a snake's an animal? Or is it not? You can believe anything.
Yeah, gossipy water moccasin.
Now, Bob, I'm going to ask you a question.
All right, I'll try to answer it.
I'm going to ask you a question.
All right.
I want you to take your right hand and lift it up.
Okay.
Put all the knowledge of the earth, all the knowledge, all this.
Okay, I got my right hand in the air.
Okay. Are you holding all the knowledge of man, all the knowledge of men in that hand?
I don't think so.
Okay.
That appears
but
to.
But if you held all the knowledge of men in your right hand and all the beliefs, all those believing, all those believers.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
In the other hand, okay?
Yeah.
I'll bet you your soul that the knowledge of man will take your right hand right down to the floor and the beliefs will just float there because there's, hey, I'm losing batteries again. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not again.
No. I'm not trying to be a preacher.
No, I understand. I've got a conflict in my mind right now.
I'm going to put you on speaker and see if it works.
All right. Let's try that.
All right. Bob, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there. That's not too bad.
Okay. I'm going to hang up this beeping thing and see if you're still there.
All right.
Okay. Hey, you are. That's wonderful. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Must be a miracle.
No, it's no miracle.
It's just technology.
It's just a thing.
Yeah, I know.
No.
But what I'm trying to get at here, there is, I don't know how many Americans saw the same stuff that Rick saw. The story that Rick saw. I'm sure that the story about the baby being bound with its a 7-month-old with its hands bound behind its back and shot through the head. I'm pretty sure that that hasn't made CNN or CBS or any of the other alphabet soups.
No.
And there's a real day of disconnect coming, isn't there, Bob?
You've turned your children. This nation has turned our children into murderers. Like they did me. They did me. Okay?
Yeah.
I want you to think about the smell. Don't think about the video screen or what you hear from CNN or you see on whatever. The games. I was with 4 young men today and I asked them a question. Just a simple question about civics. And you talk about it all the time. You always talk about the civics. What is civics? Please tell me, Bob.
What is civics?
Yeah, what is civics?
It's the study of your citizenship.
Yes, it is. It's a study of your city. It's the civics starts with the word civic, right?
Yeah.
Or being a citizen.
Yeah, well, yeah, civics, it goes back to the Latin and the word for town or city, sure.
Yeah, if you are a citizen of this nation, I'm not talking about, I'm sorry, I'm probably taking too much time.
No, you're all right so far, you're fine.
The thing is, you owe something for being here. If you don't owe anything, then you're a Republican.
Well, yeah. Well, what did these four guys say to you, Bob? I want to know.
Huh?
What these four guys you were talking to? What did they have for you? What did they tell you?
They didn't even know what the First Amendment to the Constitution was. And I asked them. I said, okay, what am I doing right here? And I said, I am exercising my rights under the First Amendment to the Constitution. This is just one of the rights. What are the other four? There are five. There are five parts of the First Amendment. Now, what are the first 10 amendments to the Constitution called? And they couldn't tell me. And I said, that's because you've never had a civics class. You have never learned anything about the Constitution of the United States. You've never learned anything about your own nation. You've never learned anything about, and your parents haven't taught you, your schools haven't taught you, so it's time that you start learning yourselves. If you want to have a nation, then build it. Don't ask me to build it for you, because I'm an old gray-haired old fart with gray hair. And I'm going out soon, and I ain't scared to go. And I'm going to ask Agent Fred, if he's on the line, to get some of his buddies together to come out here and visit me. But bring friends, Agent Fred, because Bob ain't scared. Hell, I ain't been scared to die since 1968. And I ain't scared to die now. But I am scared of everything that you people are doing, because you're cowering my people. You're making my people afraid. And like Rick asked me to do, I came on the air to say this to all of you. Stand up for yourself. Don't be afraid. The only thing you can be afraid of is fear. You have nothing to fear but the fear mongerers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Of course, you know, that. But that's, you know, for our side, Bob, we're not living in fear.
Yes, we are, because we're afraid. We're afraid to talk to the congressmen and the senators and tell them, get off your ass. Do the job I sent you to do there, or I'll replace you.
Now, see, that's the problem. The people that are listening to you right now, the people that listen to this program, Bob, are not afraid to do that. They do that every day. They do it all the time. But it's the people we're trying to figure out how to talk to that are afraid to do that. It's the people, you know, it's the people who saw that report about the deadly hot dog and said, oh my, I hope the building doesn't blow up. That building wasn't gonna blow up.
Hey, I talked to four boys today, and I asked them to go and figure it out. Not listen to me, because I don't know nothing. You don't know nothing. All you do is talk like me. And I said, go online. Just go get the information. Do the job for yourself and your children and your children's children. Because if you don't do it for yourself, ain't nobody can do it for you.
Well, ain't that the truth?
Ain't nobody can do it for you. So you get on whatever, servers or services, or take it out of that damn garbage dump and figure it out for yourself and just do it. But don't come crying to me anymore. I don't want to hear it. I want a fighting nation. I want people with some backbone. I want boys that'll stand up and fight for their children and not just whimper. Tired of the pigeons. I'm tired of it, Bob.
I understand, Bob. You know, there's a dichotomy to what we're talking about here. We're talking about you want a fighting nation, and yet the thing that we want to fight for is peace.
Is our nation in a moral state and a just state. Not the nation of Republicans, but the nation of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Yep.
Absolutely. Not my nation, our nation.
Precisely. But again, what we got to deal with, Bob, is that is the hard work. That's the hard work. It's easy to bomb some little third world nation halfway to hell. Just bomb the snot out of it and kill them. That's easy. That's easy, Bob.
You can do it because you're strong.
Yeah, that's easy to do. This is what we're talking about here is the hard work.
Yes. Let's get to it then. Because I don't want to die thinking that my children are gutless and cowards. I want to think that my children are strong. I want to think that the men I'm talking to are just as ugly as I am and just as mean as I am and just as determined as I am to be nice.
Yeah.
To be decent and loving people that have no affiliation with those people that are evil and vile, like Mike Malloy says. You know, they're, what does he say now? God, he calls them, what does he call them again? I'm sure you know.
Oh, I'm at a loss.
No,
I'm at a loss right
can't
now.
Be. Not, hey, the king speaks, and he says, you know, he says, I hate these people!
Yeah, I know.
And why does he hate them?
Because they're monsters.
Why does he hate them?
Because they're monsters.
No, he hates them because they are full of hate. He doesn't hate them because I know Mike. He's got love in his heart. I've listened to him talk about Molly and Kathy and how he wishes and he hopes and he prays for his children. And that's what makes him like me. More than anything else, Malloy, he demonstrated against the war I fought in. He demonstrated against everything that I did after the war I fought in. And I love him for that. Because he had more brains in his clippings of his little fingernail when he dropped them on the floor than I had in the whole part of my being. And now I accept him. I accept Mike Malloy because he speaks the truth.
Right.
Power.
He absolutely does. I mean, I end my night shouting they run that bit, you know, end your night screaming. I end my night screaming right there with Mike every night after this program's over. Hey, Bob, I've got to roll on.
I want to say this to you.
Okay.
I'm happy that you have this time with your father. I haven't had that luxury with my family, with my mother, and I was kind of ostracized after I came home from that place, and my Republican family kind of threw me out because I had different ideas than they did. But then they didn't go. Okay, they weren't in Vietnam. I was. Well, forgive me.
That's okay. We took care of it. We made it go away, Bob.
Okay, good.
Yeah, but the miracle of modern technology.
Word. And made it, okay.
Yeah.
But I wasn't even welcome at my mother's funeral, okay?
Oh,
and
God,
I won't
awful.
Be welcome anywhere there again. Because I'm not one of them. I've changed.
Well, you know, we're trying to reach out to each other, Bob. You're reaching out. We're trying to do is figure out a way. This is the sermon preached to the choir.
Yes,
we are trying to figure out the way that we reach out to the rest of America. And I've got somebody on the line right now that is actively engaged in that process, and I hope you'll stick around and listen to her, okay?
Of course I will.
All right.
I just got to hang up here and go back online.
Okay, great.
I love you.
We love you, Bob. Absolutely.
Forgive me for being an asshole.
No. There's that. We'll let that one slide. Okay. I got to publish. You know, one of these days I got to publish Agnes's lists of words she can't stand.
Tell Agnes I love her and I love you.
She's right here. She's got the headphones on too. She knows.
I'm praying for him. I hope you guys can watch the doggone game.
I'd like to, you know.
Or I'd like to play in the game. And he'd say, "Oh, there's that
man
again."
You know, I'm firmly rooted in the ground. I can't jump. Bob, you take care, brother. And give our best to Glenda, all right?
Bye, brother.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. With us on the line, we talked last week with Jim Lardner about the book he had edited, called Inequality Matters. And with us on the line is the author of one of the essays in that wonderful book, Betsy Leander. Is that the correct pronunciation?
That's right.
Leander? Okay, Betsy Leander, you wrote Who is the Elite in that book.
That's right.
And that's in the that's in the section talking about how we communicate our goals and ideals.
That's right.
We fret about, well, I mean, if you were on hold, you probably heard some of what just went before. We worry, we strive and we struggle about trying to talk to that other segment of the population. The people that are listening to this program get it, Betsy. You get it. I get it. There's a bunch of us that get it. What about that segment of the population? Well, I mean, that worries about sex education, whether gay people can get married, and who can pick out a China pattern. How in God's name do we communicate with them?
Well, I think it's probably not all that helpful to focus on the issues on which we polarize most and turn ourselves into an us and them if we actually sit down with somebody that we disagree with on gay marriage or sex education in the schools and try to find out, well, do we have some other issues where we have things in common? In a lot of cases, progressive people, we do have some things in common, that we are real polarized on the social issues. It's true, and I can't minimize that. But on a lot of the economic issues, progressives and working class people and actually the majority of Americans all feel the same way. Like, nobody thinks it's a good idea to have jobs like the Walmart jobs.
Right.
Nobody thinks it should be okay to pay people a minimum wage that's below the poverty level, or for people to go without health care, including health care workers going without health care. The vast majority of Americans think that what's going on with the economy is not okay.
Well, Betsy, do we just try to have those economic discussions without letting because these cultural issues are not things that we started.
Right. In some cases, that's right.
We didn't run. We didn't run the election on this stuff. We tried to talk about in 2004. We tried to talk about the economic issues. We tried to talk about what was going to happen to people's wallets.
Who's the we, though? I didn't really hear it from John Kerry.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I guess.
John Edwards, there was that lovely moment with that Two Americas commercial. Did you see that commercial?
Oh, yes.
Wonderful commercial. I was cheering at the TV, which I don't do very often. And his poll numbers rose.
Mm-hmm.
Same as 4 years before. When Al Gore started talking about the pocketbook populist issues,
mm-hmm.
his poll numbers rose. But in both cases, it was whisked away very, very rapidly. Because it doesn't appeal to the big donors. They've got to be, you know, the Democrats at a national level are so beholden to the sources of big money.
In your opinion, Betsy, what are those sources?
The sources of money?
Yeah, the big money people.
I don't even think it's the opinion because it's all documented. You have to register that.
Yeah.
They still do get union money, but that is shrinking in absolute and relative terms, and what's been growing is the corporate money and the large individual donors.
Right, because the union people, Betsy, as far as I can tell, are trying to talk about the issues that matter.
Yeah.
They're trying to talk about, you know, the pay equity, sweat equity, if you
yep.
will. And when we've got the Joe Bidens out there who can't be troubled to vote against a bankruptcy bill because Joe Biden represents Citicorp, not the
mm-hmm.
people of Delaware.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what you're talking about.
It's exactly what I'm talking about. So, I think not that the cultural and social issues aren't important. They are. I'm myself. I got married to a woman 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations!
Thank you. Gail Leander Wright is my legal spouse now after almost 15 years together.
I've had some lovely email conversations with Gail.
With Gail, yeah, I know you have. I think she got you together with me and Jim. And So, of course, I'm very invested, but I think that you deal with an issue differently when you know that the country is split 50-50. I think we're split 50-50 on abortion. I think we're split 50-50 on gay rights, a number of other things, the role of religion in public life and guns. We're really evenly divided, and, you know, we need to have a principled struggle with each other as Americans, but we don't need to demonize the other side as human beings. We need to not forget that we may also agree on some issues, as I was saying. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we need not to do, we need to not confuse those political differences with class differences.
Oh, I think you're so right in that regard.
Yeah, that there's an enormous stereotype that liberals and conservatives both perpetuate, that all the liberal and progressive opinions are people with more money and more formal education, and that all the conservative viewpoints are working class and poor people, and in particular white working class, Southerners, etc. And that, if you actually follow polls and the poll, you know, the exit interviews, exit data from elections, it's really far from the truth that political viewpoints and class line up. But there's a stereotype that it does, and who that stereotype benefits is conservative Republicans.
Absolutely.
So the first thing that we need to do as progressives is to not feed into that stereotype by not acting like a bunch of elitists.
Well, and that goes to the heart of your inquiry and your essay in
right.
Inequality Matters. You got to admit, though, Betsy, it's easy to make fun of George.
Oh, it is. Of course it is. And, you know, if I were a comedian, I'd be looking around for material. Certainly a lot of things that the president and his cabinet do would be easy fodder. But first of all, of course we should be criticizing him. He's doing a lot of very terrible things. But watch the language with which people criticize him. Watch the how often it happens that words about intelligence and stupidity are used.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are class-coded words. When we make Bush's dumb jokes,
mm-hmm.
like making fun of his ways of mispronouncing words, you know, they misunderestimated me or whatever.
Yeah, right.
When we do things like that, we are positioning ourselves as like the school marm, you know, the coastal elites, the people who say whom, you know. and we are positioning him
as a
symbolically. As a hick.
As a champion of the ordinary guy.
Exactly. We're there's class coding in any insults or praise that have to do with intelligence. Because that's what our educational system does. By class, calls the working class people dumb. Working class people know perfectly well they're not dumb and resent being thought of as dumb and identify with people who are being insulted as dumb. So it backfires. It's a big mistake to insult him in terms of intelligence. The problem with George Bush is not that he's stupid. I don't know if he's stupid. He might be smart. He might be stupid. Molly Ivan says he's smart, and she knows. But that's not the problem. The problem is he's in the pocket of wealthy special interests, and he's acting on their behalf against all of our self-interest. He's trashing our country. That's what's wrong with him. Say the truth to the American people instead of making all these little coy jokes about stupidity.
Well, is it an extension of that elitism? Because if it is, I'm terribly, terribly guilty to talk about the things that he does, the policies that he engages in terms of morality.
No, I think it's fine, of course, to use our values, to use moral terms, to say this is immoral, to weaken environmental standards and poison our country and the world, to not deal with global warming, that's immoral. We're betraying future generations by doing that, or by running up such a huge deficit that our great-grandchildren are going to have to be paying it off. To frame those in moral terms is wonderful. I think that's something that everybody can relate to.
Because we got apparently, and Jim Wallace's essay in the book speaks to this, you know, that awful little poll that was taken on the day of the election. You know, there was the Iraq War, there was the economy, and there was moral values, as if the Iraq War and the economy had nothing to do with moral values.
That's right.
And
right.
And this the new polling data that's out, Betsy, says that only, I can't remember, it's today, it's either 43 or 47% of America, only that number now thinks of the Iraq War as being morally justified.
Oh.
And, yeah, I think the same thing just happened to you that happened to me when I found out that there were still that many people that were willing to say that.
Right, exactly.
And
well, I think that I think it is often a good idea to frame things in moral terms, to frame foreign policy when we're able in those terms. I think foreign policy is a lot harder because people know a lot less about it. It is easier for, you know, the spinmeisters to pull the wool over people's eyes. I think that things that people experience in their daily lives, it's harder to do that. So if I were running for election right now, I would stress the poverty wages and the lack of universal health care, the you know, keeping Social Security secure and not privatizing it. I think those are things where people's common sense is firmly in control, and that it's so clear that it's corporate special interests against common sense and the common good. I would stress those as the top priorities. And I will just eat my hat if we see any National Democrats doing that. I think it's, I think the way the issues on which you get votes and the issues on which you get money have diverged.
Until such time as we get public funding of elections, I have to agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, it's the fundamental issue of our time. It really is.
The next question, however, I suppose, is as we move forward. And we talk about it a lot. I call this conversation radio here because the people that take the time to call into this program are a lot more interested in the interchange that they have with me than they are in hearing me yak.
Uh-huh. So
frankly, that doesn't happen much in talk radio anywhere in America.
That's great. Good for you.
But toward that end, the dialogue that we've been having lately is how, you know, you said, I'll eat my hat if I see any National Democrats running on that list of very critical issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the dialogue we've been having here, Betsy, is do you start that? What do we do about that? You know,
right.
do committed progressives, I mean, there are, and this is somewhat stereotypical, but it's also very true. There are a lot of committed, really, really bright, brilliant, smart people on our side of the debate who, for some reason, known but to Almighty God or whomever, won't get into politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, until such time as they do on a national level, I'm thinking you're going to continue to be right in your assertion. And they're not going, and those issues are not going to be discussed. So do we punt the national level and start working toward getting on the county commission and dog catcher and the library board? Or do we just give up and wait for a savior to rise from the streets?
Well, there is a lot of good work being done on the local and state level. I just read an article on the subway today, actually, about that. You see nothing but despair if you look to the federal level, and then if you start looking at the state and local level, there's fantastic organizing going on. It was in the Progressive, and I'm going to open it up while we're here so that I can give credit to who said this. But I just think that the role model should be the living wage movement,
mm-hmm.
where people tried and tried to get a minimum wage increase passed on the federal level and on some state levels, weren't able to do it, and so went to work on the municipal contractors to say our tax dollars are not going to go to pay poverty wages. And what is it? It's over 125 places around the country now that have passed living wage ordinances saying that there's you have to pay above the poverty level or the cost of living locally. That should be our model, that has pushed the groundswell. There was just the Let Justice Roll campaign came out on Martin Luther King Day.
Mm-hmm.
It pushed a national groundswell of trying to get action on the minimum wage. Okay, that article was by Ruth Conniff in this month's Progressive, the best edited magazine on the left, in my opinion.
Yes.
She said, discouraging as national politics seems at the moment, there's a groundswell of activity at the state level that ought to give progressives some cheer. I think that's where you got to look, put your attention, as well as I think it's a very healthy thing that there's election reform, campaign reform, lobbyist reform efforts going on right now. There's people working all over the country on things that would have made all the difference in the last presidential election, such as felon disenfranchisement and voter, the kinds of fraud that kept so many people, especially African Americans, away from the polls.
Right.
I think cleaning up the electoral system and building a progressive movement from the ground up on the local level. I'm not sure what other choices we have.
Well, I'm not either. Because what I get a lot of, Betsy, is a sense of absolute utter disgust with the choices we have. We're in supposedly more or less of a primary mode right now, aiming toward the 2006 midterms.
Mm-hmm. And there may be some good news. We don't know.
My problem, I got no progressives to vote for.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not talking third party stuff. I'm talking about returning the Democratic Party to its roots, to the fundamentals that FDR was talking about.
You know,
when he put forward his four freedoms, lo and behold, I read those the other day, and guess what? They're still relevant.
They're very relevant, and we wish we had them.
And as a consequence of that, the movements you're talking about, absolutely. And if we can get somebody to run for county commission out of that, if we can,
if there's somebody out there
who can muster up the gumption to get up and go door to door and run for Congress, good for them.
Yep. Yep. And meanwhile, let's hold their feet to the fire.
Sure. And organize
people to just not let them get away with it.
Well, one last question with regard to, an attempt to change the dialogue. Do you have any thoughts or do you have any suggestion for what we do when they bring it to us? Because again, the Kerry, I'm in West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And two states in the union in the 2004 election cycle received a flyer from the Republican National Committee. And if I'm not mistaken, it showed John Kerry putting a knife through a Bible.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
And it said, John Kerry is going to come and get your Bible. And that was West Virginia and Arkansas.
Wow.
Now, when they...
Very stark.
Do you... Yeah. It was horrifying. I mean, I they stood behind it. They were proud of what they did, just like they were proud of the Swift Boat people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they bring that kind of stuff, do we, in my mind, you got to fight that back. You can't just let that roll off your back like water off a duck's back.
Well, if you have all, it's going to be a lot easier to fight that if you've already got prominent religious people involved in your movements, in your party, and if it's going to be harder to pull that off, if it's clearly a welcoming place for Christians, for other religions, as well as for non-religious people, and I've noticed a real resurgence of anti-religious belittling, not just disagreement, because of course we disagree. Atheists disagree with religious people. People of different religions have different doctrines. There's nothing wrong with respectfully disagreeing, but there's been a wave of belittling and mocking and equating religious faith with stupidity among very reputable leftists.
Well, I think I'm probably guilty of some of that, Betsy.
Yeah, you've got to cut it out. You've got to cut it out, because the truth is, there are wonderful progressive religious activists.
Well,
watching Jim Wallace rally the progressive evangelicals, and I heard some of his book tour interviews and speeches, and it's a treasure.
Yeah, and
we have Christians who are looking to their Bible and saying, I need to get rid of poverty. That's what God wants me to do. And some of the most noble, I'm not a Christian myself, but some of the most noble activists I've ever seen, and the people who do the really tough, community organizing,
yeah, the
and
gritty stuff,
service work, they're doing it straight out of their Christian religious faith.
I agree. And I guess where my guilt arises, and this isn't some sort of mea culpa, I differentiate, frankly. I differentiate between the people you just described and what I call the religion industry.
Uh-huh.
Because I can't equate, and I have to draw a challenge, I think, between someone like, say, James Dobson, who writes books that says that children should be beaten until they cry real tears, and writes it in the name of Christ Jesus.
Uh-huh.
I can't, maybe belittling is the wrong word, but I think as we seek this common ground, Jim Wallace is doing brilliant work when he talks about what a moral document the Gospels are. And how every tenth verse that Jesus speaks is about how we treat the poor and the downtrodden.
That's right.
There are people on the other side, Betsy, who say, they just ignore it. And they run to Leviticus, and they're more concerned with that litany of a man shall not lie down with a man, and nor shall he eat boiled shrimp. I'm glad I got a laugh out of you. Because I feel bad about that sometimes, but it's a total misunderstanding. There's a brilliant book out there right now called Misquoting Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That I think should be probably a primer. But I hope as we seek the means by which, because we got whipped on religion in 2004.
Yep. And I think we need to watch our tone, because there are some very dangerous fundamentalist theocrats doing manipulative things in our country who we should vehemently oppose in everything they're trying to do. But if we allow our way of talking to them to become shrill, to become hateful, to become contemptuous and belittling, who is going to take that tone as towards themselves? Is not them. They don't pay any attention to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's going to be the rank and file Christian person who could interpret their faith in a number of different ways, and they hear our tone, and they think these people hate us. They hate religious people. They hate Christianity. They hate me. These people are snobs and anti-religious elitists. And it loses. There's potentially liberal people who are lost.
Well, sometimes I think that is a very good point. It's something I'm going to have to chew on a little bit, Betsy, because in some ways I think the Dobsons and the Falwells and the Robertsons, they're not there to train or lead their flock. Their flock are already mesmerized. They've had the Kool-Aid, whatever.
Yeah.
And they are there to draw us out so that they can have a perpetual enemy.
Right. Right, and we keep playing into the role. That's the point. That's what I was writing about in Inequality Matters and also in my book, In Class Matters. We keep playing into that role. They need us to act like, very highly educated, anti-religious, condescending...
Secular humanist,
but just coastal elite.
Yeah.
They need us to play that role.
They need us to be their bête noire.
Yeah. Well, we need to
stop
playing in that role. We don't have to play that part. You can talk to someone you disagree with about religion or about social issues with respect. And why is that such a hard lesson for us to learn? It might be the thing that is the difference between winning an election and losing an election.
I think it may be, and I think it's hard to learn, Betsy, because We, on our side, see ourselves as very much a live and let live group, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence of that, when somebody comes at us with a pamphlet that's got a knife through a Bible and tells us that's what we stand for, no amount of kumbaya singing is gonna make us not want to fight that, because
it's an abject
lie.
I'm looking at a different source. I think you're onto something there. But the book I wrote called Class Matters,
mm-hmm,
is about the subtitle is Cross Class Activists.
Okay.
I think that a lot of liberals, not all, because we're a mixed class,
right,
political tendency, but there's lots of us that grew up with college-educated, homeowning parents, expected to go to college, rewarded in the tracking system of the schools, being told we're smart, you know, and we're special, and expecting to go into professions, and expecting working-class people to serve us. That was the training we got. We got really, really classist training.
Forgive me, but I was born and raised in Alabama, and that's just amazing for me to hear. I mean, I'm as liberal as the day is long, and I guess there were people like that out there. I've never known them.
You've never known them?
No.
Okay, so your experience is different, but if you look at who is populating the think tanks, the media outlets, the Democratic Party, it's a lot of people who that's their life story.
Well, when John,
and that's why their politics are so off. Their tone is so off. They step on people's toes and seem condescending because they were trained to be that way, and we got to unlearn that.
Gosh, I hope I can help, because, you know, I come from the beans and cornbread crowd.
Okay, good.
And I mean,
probably you have some better ways of talking to regular people.
But you're absolutely right, Betsy, because, you know, when the 2004 election comes down to a choice between one Skull and Bonesman and another Skull and Bonesman,
exactly,
there's a bunch of us out here that said, yeah, I don't got the handshake.
Right, right. Right. We got, I mean, the concept of choosing a candidate that regular people can relate to. Working class people are the majority of the country.
Yeah.
Working-class white people are the plurality of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose somebody who just is so, so likely to rub people in that demographic group the wrong way.
Well,
like,
yeah,
John Kerry, you know, we believed it. When Maureen Dowd said that John Kerry said, "Who among us does not love NASCAR?" He didn't actually say it. It was apocryphal. But we all believed it because it sounded just like him. He's trying to be, like, down with the regular working class people, and, you know, there he is.
Yeah, and, exploiting Howard Dean when he said,
right,
my favorite book of the New Testament is Job. Now, anybody who ever spent his time in the basement of the Baptist church with the little blue-haired ladies like I do know that Job's in the Old Testament.
Right.
And that thing got beaten across this country like a little tin drum. And I think you're really onto something, Betsy, with this, because look at the last two Democrat presidents elected, and look at the commonality that they have. You got Bill Clinton, and I know there's a lot of progressives that, oh yeah, best Republican president we ever had. And I understand some of that, but you got Bill Clinton and you got Jimmy Carter,
right?
And they spoke to the ordinary. And when we send, and I'm not saying it has to be a Southerner. I was very much taken with Dennis Kucinich, because when that guy looks at you and tells you, "I know what it's like to live in a freaking car,"
you believe him.
Yeah, you know that he's coming right from that vinyl that vinyl seat cover.
Right, right, right. Somebody, I think people are open to voting for somebody that they disagree with on certain things if they, you know, look them in the eye and talk like a down-to-earth person and feel like it's someone who can understand the kinds of problems that us ordinary people have.
Yeah. And
so I don't know why that's, like, hard to figure out.
Well,
I feel very frustrated with the National Democrats, as you can tell.
Yeah, well, I am too. And, I mean, the strategists and the pollsters and the people who tell you how it's got to be and you got to do it this way and you can't... You can't be a Democrat. There's as long a list of what you can't do if you're a Democrat as anything that you can.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, I had a bad feeling when we nominated Senator Kerry.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
I mean,
you're
in Boston.
Oh, yeah, no, I know,
you know, up east,
about him.
Up east liberal, great guy, wonderful in the Senate, stay there.
Well, not so great.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of a phoning it in kind of.
Well, I know, actually. I know, yeah, I know, he's a lunch buddy of the guy who owns the coal mine that blew up in West Virginia.
Right.
And
no, he's done some good votes, but where are his actual loyalties? I think they're to himself, to his donors. I think, to veterans and people missing in action. You know, relatives of people missing in action. I think that's sincere. I don't know if he's got any other sincere issues at all.
Do you see we've got to wrap it up, and I thank you for spending so much time with me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Do you see anybody on the horizon in 08 that you can feel good about in the Democratic Party in the presidential race?
Well, probably. I work for a nonprofit, United for a Fair Economy.
Right.
So I can't endorse.
No, we're not endorsing.
Or parties, but I did know. You know, I did notice that bump up in the polls with John Edwards and the Two Americas. That was my most hopeful moment of the last race. I was kind of hoping he'd be nominated. I think.
Well, is there a way then that we get these? Okay, I'll use the language I grew up with. Is there a way we get these snobs,
right,
to listen to us? I mean,
think build a movement. A cross-class, cross-race movement that's so strong that they can't ignore it. That's the only way. And that United for a Fair Economy, that's our mission, is supporting the growth of a cross-race, cross-class movement, choosing the issues of economic inequality as the preeminent crisis of our times and also the unity issue. That's the thing that unifies us. Many things divide us, but that's the thing that unifies us, is we're all horrified by the Enron people taking over and the Walmarts taking over. We're all horrified at how work doesn't pay anymore.
And unitedforafaireconomy.org, that is your website?
It's faireconomy.org,
oh,
yep.
Faireconomy.org.
Faireconomy.org.
Lots of resources there, I assume.
Yep, resources there. Also, inequality.org, Jim Lardner's website.
Right.
And my own website is classmatters.org.
And that's also a book which people can purchase.
That's right.
And help you out.
That's right.
All right, Betsy Leander Wright, thank you so very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure talking with you.
I hope we can have some more of this conversation at a later date. I really, really do think that we've got to think about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll look forward to that, Bob.
All right. Take care, Betsy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Fascinating conversation. You hear the Rush Limbaughs of the world talking, you know, limousine liberals. I guess there are some. And maybe I got the wrong fraternity handshake or something, but all the Democrats I've ever known were working people. And that's just the simple truth of it. Tell you what, let's take our top of the hour break, come back, take some of your phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The manray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
I'm Bruce Birch, and here are the headlines from the Head On Radio Network. With George Bush's poll numbers falling like spring rain, the Pentagon announced a new offensive in Iraq today. Operation Swarmer is the largest air offensive of Bush's three-year war against Iraq. More than 50 aircraft and 1,000 soldiers descended upon a rural area near Samarra in advance of the opening of Iraq's parliament. With the targets being residential, more civilian casualties are expected. The raid came amid plummeting American sentiments about the possibility of the U.S. winning the war. A new CNN USA Today Gallup poll shows Americans much more pessimistic about the outcome of George Bush's war. Fully 60% of those surveyed understand that things aren't going well in Iraq. 55% had the common sense to realize that Iraq is sliding towards civil war. Only 47% of Americans now approve of Bush's slaughter in Iraq on a moral basis. Amid growing American disillusionment with Bush's Iraq war, the White House is still forging ahead. The Bush administration released its National Security Strategy paper today. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley still claims that George Bush has the right to make war on any country of his choosing at any time. The most hair-raising part of the report is the portion that maintains George Bush may still start a war against Iran. And of course, another side effect of low Bush poll numbers is increased government terror warnings. The Cox Arena in San Diego was cleared today before NCAA tournament basketball games. Authorities reported their bomb-sniffing dogs discovered a suspicious package in the arena, causing the evacuation. The suspicious package turned out to be a package of condiments outside a hot dog stand. They're getting better at spotting suspicious hot dog stands, but the Department of Homeland Security still has a long way to go. That's the latest from a report detailing the department's failings in dealing with taxpayer dollars. The department's inspector general says that 20% of the money Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff handed out for port security had nothing to do with preventing a bomb from coming into one of America's many vulnerable ports. The White House is very excited about its new Homeland Security Center for faith-based initiatives. Iraqi resistance to the American occupation is apparently contagious. The top commander in Afghanistan says devices being used in that pathetic country show signs of influence from Iraqi bomb makers. General Benjamin Freakley said today that his command is still trying to figure out how the Afghanis got the Iraqi technology. This is news from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children has doubled, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children will use them. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
An American company has poisoned several British citizens. Paraxyl, a company from the U.S., administered human tests of a new drug that has critically poisoned several people in the U.K. The drug was designed to fight autoimmune disorders and leukemia. Instead, it has left at least two young people near death. The British government has halted the tests run for German drug maker Tegenero and sent warnings about the drug worldwide. The state of Illinois is suing a nuclear power company for putting poison in the water. The state served papers on Exelon today for spilling millions of gallons of water laced with tritium into Illinois waterways. Tritium is a poisonous radioactive element. It got into the water when Exelon had a series of accidents at its Braidwood plant that sent the poison water into the ground around the plant. Exelon says it broke no laws. Halliburton is admitting it nearly poisoned our troops. In a report released Thursday, the giant war profiteer confessed that it failed to assemble and use its own water purification equipment at an American military installation outside Ramadi in Iraq. Halliburton's report says that it pumped filthy, polluted water straight out of the Euphrates River into the camp. The Bush administration has no intention of doing a thing about the near disaster. Housing starts are down. Federal government data shows construction of new homes decreased by 7.9% from January. Although construction is still going up, home purchases have also begun to fall. Economists say that the housing market can't tolerate that kind of imbalance for long. In a report that's bound to drive religious fundamentalists to distraction, NASA scientists announced Thursday that they've looked back in time to an instant right after the Big Bang, 1/1,000,000,000 of a second after the Big Bang, to be precise. The scientists say that the U.S. space probe has seen the moment when the entire universe went from subatomic size to its present state in less than the blink of an eye. The probe examined light that has been traveling across the universe for over 13 billion years. I'm Bruce Birch, and that's the news from the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I got to get Agnes a pill or something. I very much enjoyed our conversation with Betsy Leander, right? And I think her essay, if her book is as good as her essay is, she has a lot of valid commentary to make. And I hope you understand that what she was saying very sweetly is what we say every night at this program after but we sound like we've just gargled razor blades before we say it. I admire someone who can say, "I'm very upset with the National Democrats." This woman, and I've emailed with her and with her spouse extensively. We're talking about people committed to everything we talk about being the right way to run America. Fair wages, a chance to go to the doctor when you're sick, or when your kid's sick. Or the idea that being laid off from work doesn't mean that you're, you know, facing absolute economic ruin. True FDR democratic principles. But it blows my mind to think that there are people up there, out there, who've never met a beans and cornbread Democrat. Because we're out here. The question is finding the way to remind people that they are. All those Reagan Democrats, those mugwumps who crossed over to vote for Ronald Reagan and thereafter just, "Well, I'm a Republican." In Tennessee and South Carolina and Georgia and North Carolina and Florida and Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas and some. Those people were raised out of the damn dirt by FDR, and they remembered him for it. But the thing is, the people who remembered, I keep coming back to this, Republicans can only get away with their crap when the last generation that remembers that crap dies off. And that explains your Southern so-called Reagan Democrats, because they didn't eat the damn mustard sandwiches that their parents and their grandparents ate. They didn't pour... you remember that wonderful scene from To Kill a Mockingbird, where Scout is appalled that her young luncheon guest is pouring sorghum molasses all over his biscuits. "Well, Atticus, he's pouring it all over everything. He's ruining his meal." "Young lady, you will eat in the kitchen until you can act like you can sit in civilized society." The crowd that poured the molasses on their biscuits ran, not walked, baby, they ran to the polls to vote for FDR. And they're no different than different than Southern people now, except for the Southern people now that are voting for Republicans have been hoodooed. They've been to the medicine show, they had a big swig of the snake oil, and they're wandering around drunker than Adam's off ox, and they're voting Republican in the process. Maybe that's why I am the only born and bred Southern talk radio host. Maybe I'm one of the few people in America that comes from there that gets it. Let's go to the phones. Gene is with us from Oregon. Hey, Gene, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm a little off. I just came down from the hospital, so.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I'm the outpatient procedure, so if I'm a little off, just put it down to the drug.
okay.
Your guess that you had.
Uh-huh.
I agree with what she says, but the thing that's so hard for me, to be honest, the thing about religion, and, you know, you can call religious people stupid, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but I find that it's hard for me to be very accepting of them. And the reason I'm that way is the way I grew up in a lot of different churches. I was raised Mormon, but I had a lot of different church upbringings. Mormon and, believe it or not, kind of like Baptist, which is kind of a hard mix.
Yeah, that's...
yeah.
Man, Gene, I'm surprised you...
Well, here's the way it works. Mom's family was Methodist, Dad's side was Baptist, and when my parents were together and that kind of thing, when we were younger, Mom decided she wanted to try Mormonism because she thought it was a nice idea. Which I'm not a Mormon either now, so, well, at least not a... Well, technically, yes, but I don't really...
Yeah, you're kind of apostate.
Yeah, that's me. That's why I hang out with the Unitarians and feel good about myself.
Right.
But the point I was trying to bring up was that I just feel so... I know that it probably comes across to people of faith that I would be one of these stuck-up, you know, religion is garbage Democrats because that's the way I come off. But I think what it is I've had a lot of, you know, growing up in those different religions, and so I always never seem to conform. You know, I kind of feel like, well, fine, if you're not going to be satisfied with me, I don't want to even be around you.
Well, and I think Gene, you're absolutely right, because what we're talking about here is, and I guess I conveyed it poorly, and I apologize for that. When people are coming at you with their religion like a baseball bat,
yeah,
I'm going to respond all kinds of ways.
Yeah,
one of them's going to be to get a baseball bat of my own.
Yeah, I mean. I've had people here in Oregon that have come and said, "Can you pray for you, sir?" It's like, I rather than just lunge at them and just yell at them, I generally try to just blow them off because I had to put up with that a long time. But I'm sorry, I can't at this moment put my arm around the same folk and say, "Hey, look, you and I got a lot in common. Let's talk." Now, what I will go this far. I will say, I'll be willing to, if the person is like a United Church of Christ member,
yeah,
fairly liberal denomination. What if they were a member of, say, any church that the evangelicals would call dead? Then I would feel more comfortable talking to that person. But my point, I think that Christine, it's the progressive evangelical's job to have to go out and go back to their other evangelicals and say, "Look, we don't believe the way you do. We believe in God, and we feel that you've hijacked our religion," which they have.
Yeah.
That's
well, you know, I think what you're getting at, if I could be so bold as to
sure.
almost try to take your idea a step further, and it really does jibe with a lot of what I'm thinking. there, you know, in like in addiction situations,
yeah,
there are people out there who have the guts to get out and do what they call an intervention. And for those people of faith on this side of the debate, we really, really, really want to do an intervention for the otherwise decent people. It's not just the faith that's been hijacked, Gene. It's those people who have been hijacked, and they're getting their money stolen from them. They're getting their labor stolen from them.
Yeah.
They're getting their lives stolen from them, because at the end of the day, they're going to lay on that bed or whatever at the end of their 3 score and 10 and go, oh, hell, I got robbed.
Yeah.
And I'd like for them not to do that.
Well, I'm going to throw out one other thing, and this is neither here nor there, but I was thinking today, because, my mom and the rest of my family is all back in Michigan, and they're of that same evangelical kind of, and they're not fairly progressive. They're fairly right-wing Republicans. And I'd like to get to them and sit down and say, look, I listen to my liberal talk shows and stuff because to me that's church. And the point I'm bringing out about this is basically, evangelicals and conservatives say, well, liberals don't go to church, that kind of thing. In a sense, we do, in the sense that we tune into this or Mike or we read whatever book. I mean, we kind of approach it in a similar way. We just have different sins, if you will.
Well, right. Or, I don't buy much into the concept of sin in the first place.
But, yeah, well, I know. But, I mean,
but
like,
no, I understand what you're saying. And the thing is, I joke about, Brother Bob's Cathedral of Common Sense.
Yeah.
But some of that is, and I freely admit that that my background, my upbringing, informs the way I go about doing this show.
Yeah.
And some of that is, we do reach out to each other. I'm so proud of what happens for 3 hours every night, Gene.
Yeah.
That, it's not me reaching out to other people. It's other people reaching out to me. And I'm touched by it, and I'm moved by it. And it's very much like a religious experience.
It is. And what I mean by different sins, what I mean is, like, where that side would get uptight over abortion rights, we get uptight over lack of pollution controls and that kind of thing on an automobile.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean.
Okay.
By,
well, that, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And one last quick thing. I was going to tell you this last night. I went to therapy yesterday, actually, and that same conservative guy the guy that told me the Brazilian joke. we got to talking because while I was going to do my thing, I was reading Outdoor Life magazine or whatever that is, and wouldn't you know, they had an article on page 23 of the December-January issue for 2006. And this guy had managed to catch an 873-pound salmon, which broke a record, but it also broke another record in the fact that it had 2.5 times the level of mercury that's considered, safe to eat. So it goes on in the article after this is I think the thing was if it's 1.9% or 1.9 parts per billion, which I think is supposed to be quote unquote acceptable, then you can only really eat about 4 ounces a month and stay in the limit. So we got to talking about that, and I thought, gee, that was interesting that you would find that in an Outdoor Life magazine.
Yeah, right, and some of that's very valuable because the hunters and the fishermen have to understand that they would be better off on the side of the so-called tree huggers and the enviro Nazis than they would on the people who want to pave the places that they used to hunt.
Oh yeah, and we got onto all kinds of other things. It's kind of weird because here he is, a physical therapist. And, I kept saying, because we were talking about OHSU, which is a big hospital up here, and he was mad about a bill he had to pay that was like $400 for a 20-minute consultation. And then it says, we ought to go for single-payer
healthcare. I don't even bother with socialized medicine. And he comes back and goes, oh, but that's socialized medicine. And it's like, no, it's not. It's single-payer healthcare. It's the same thing. And it's like, oh, no.
but two steps, one step forward and two steps back, Gene.
But the one thing he does kind of, it scares the crap out of him is the peak oil thing. So
yeah,
at least there's hope.
Well, you know, and you're carrying on that dialogue. You know, I don't know where it's going to go when you get to the point. They all have some sort of tipping point. You can talk to them and talk to them. I experienced this dealing with conservative West Virginians over in Beckley. I agree with you there. But they've got that tipping. No, because see, John Kerry wants my guns.
Yeah.
You know, they've all got some tipping point. That will keep them in the fold of the deliberately self-benighted, and I greater minds than I obviously have pondered the whys and wherefores of it,
yeah.
And we can't come up with an answer. You know, if you make that connection, you have done something right nigh unto miraculous, Gene. And I'm not being a smart aleck.
I doubt it because the entire office is rapidly well. I don't know if they're ever leaving. The secretary is a lot worse than he is, but at least I can talk to him.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Gene, so good talking to you. You have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
You too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we are joined now by our good friend from WD40.com. That's DUBYAD40.com. Dookie the webmaster. Hey, Dookie, how's it going? You're head on.
Hey, Bob, what's going on?
Ah, we're having more fun than most human beings deserve to have.
Oh, I don't think you're having more fun than I am right now.
Yeah, probably not, because...
Well, we just left the bar, so that's...
Well,
that's
kind of where that's where I was getting at.
I want to say hi to Agnes. We love Agnes. She's our girl.
And she loves you guys. I can't pull her away from your website now. She is a comment-posting fiend.
You know, I've got the same problem at home because my wife can't pull me away from porn. So
were you the guy that called Dell that called the Home Shopping Network the other night about the new Dell computer?
It was pretty classic. No, that wasn't me. That was my brother. No. I'll tell you what, if you stay up late at night and you watch the Home Shopping Network, it gets crazy. I've seen a guy light himself on fire on accident with a toaster. I'm serious. You get drunk or there's any other paraphernalia that you do and you end up watching Home Shopping Network late at night. We're talking about 2 or 3 in the morning.
Better than Pink Floyd.
It's better than Pink Floyd. I mean, it is so funny. I mean, you wouldn't believe all the stuff I have here at the house. You know, I've got the Ronco Pocket Fisherman.
Oh, you got it? Yeah, how can you not have the Pocket Fisherman?
Yeah.
The button ear? Do you have the button ear, Dookie?
No, I don't have the button ear.
Oh, darn the luck.
No, I couldn't find a credit card, but no, I have a lot of stuff from watching that late at night. Who knows? You know, sometimes I can't sleep. So.
Well, yeah. Well, I tell you that what we're talking about here, just so folks will know, I guess it was Clyde sent along the clip, a guy calling the Home Shopping Network, they were selling Dell computers.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could probably Google this up. It's out there, isn't it?
I think it's on, if they go to YouTube, which is YOUTUBE.com, and search for the Dell computer, I think they'll find it. So.
Yeah, I'm you know, from now on, our outward should be porno. guy talking about how much he enjoys his new Dell computer and why he enjoys it so much at 2 o'clock in the morning calling from Delaware.
Oh, yeah. And there was only one reason why, and I think it hit him pretty good. So.
Oh, just the look on the woman's face is priceless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was like, we got to go to commercial right now. So, yeah, you got to love humor, you know. So.
No, we got to laugh somewhere along the way. I mean, that's, you know, I was it was half funny and half tragic just watching the whole hot dog of death scare out there in San Diego, California today. It just, because, you know, I'm a brackets guy. I'm a big dance guy. I follow the tournament.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And to see an entire arena evacuated because a dog smelled an 8-week-old hot dog inside a hot dog stand.
Exactly.
You know, you can't pay for that stuff.
Well, look what happened there in New York. What was it, about 6 months ago? It's kind of the same thing type happened with the subway with the some person had a backpack and they thought it was a bomb and sure enough, it didn't happen, and even the governor decided to, or I'm sorry, the mayor of New York City decided to ride the subway the very next day. I mean, sometimes you think this stuff is planted, you know.
Well,
Butch's poll numbers go down, there's something that comes out.
Exactly. You know? This thing in San Diego was so Rovian, I'm surprised the dog wasn't, like, you know, short, fat, and bald and had funny-looking glasses.
And his nickname was Turd Blossom.
That's exactly. Anything wild and wonderful happening over at WD-40?
Oh, we got a lot of stuff going on. How do you like the new design?
I think that's gorgeous. It's a lot less static than what the old one was.
Oh yeah.
It's a little bit more fun to wander around, and the commentary is more prominently featured.
Oh yeah. Well, we spent a lot of time on it. We got a lot of our readers came up and asked us, you know, what can we do to make the site even more interactive than what we already had, and well, we ended up coming up with this. So. We can offer main stuff, you know, main information that we want to get out there that's the most important that we feel at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, like action alerts and, hey, you know, this guy's going up against Joe Lieberman. You might want to help out his campaign.
Right.
And, you know, we still offer headlines and so on. So, we put a lot of time, a lot of effort into it, and we're getting a lot of good feedback.
Is the hit counter spinning pretty good?
I was telling Agnes, before I came on that, we average anywhere from about 850,000 hits to 1 million a day right now. So
jumping, Jehoshaphat.
Well, we've done pretty good. I mean, when we started out, you know, it got pretty bad, and we were on Howard Stern.
Yeah.
And Howard Stern's audience came over to us when they heard about it, and that's kind of how we started. So we got a lot of East Coast hits right now. So.
Well, that means we got to work the West Coast a little bit now.
Yeah, well, we get a lot of West Coast now because we've been featured on a lot of the liberal sites. We've been on, you know, like Daily Kos and Democrat Underground and so on. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's where we fill in the gaps at. And especially the North, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, they hit us a lot. You know, even Florida, down south, Florida hits us a lot. So,
well, we're trying to get a few people out of the red states to hit you a little bit too.
Hey,
so.
we've been getting them too, and actually last night I logged on to the chat rooms the night before, and got to speak with one of your listeners, Nanette. She's a nice girl. She sent us an email. So,
oh, Nanette's wonderful people.
If she's listening right now and on the chat room, I just want to say hi to her. She's a very lovely lady, and we're glad that she's a new reader now. I know she, I guess for the longest time, was trying to figure out exactly what was the name of our website, and if it wasn't for Agnes to spell it out on a chat room, she would have never known about us. So.
Yeah, see, I just take it for granted, Doogie.
I know.
I'm so used to it that, you know, and I've sent a lot of people over to the aerosol lubricant website.
You know, because, well, for the longest time, we always had a disclaimer down at the bottom of the website that said, you know, in no way are we affiliated with the WD-40 product, but we do recommend the lubricant because I use it all the time. So
it's delicious on sweet taters.
Oh, I tell you what, and you know that late night where you're home alone and you got nothing to do. Looks at you as the dog, you know. I mean, why not? You know.
Exactly.
You can lock the door on the bathroom. Who knows?
and when it gets stuck, you can unlock it with the WD-40.
Exactly. If you can turn the knob because your hand's so greasy.
No, God. You're going to get me in trouble. You understand that, don't you?
I'm trying to be as clean as possible. Oh, no, this is like this is actually pretty mild for our bar nights.
One of these days I want to be there for the bar night.
I hope you guys are. It's pretty fun. Actually, the place that we are at, you know, here in town, the bar really enjoys us. The entire staff comes up and hugs us and says hi, and even all the other customers, they know who we are. They know what we do. And believe it or not, in the reddest of red states of Kansas, they don't like Bush no more. So it's really nice to be in that environment now where we can talk and everyone's all in agreement. Because, you know, 6-7 years ago, it was the exact opposite. I mean, they were just blood red. So.
Oh, yeah. Carrying little pictures of George Bush up on the cross or something.
Oh, yeah. They had a thing for Clinton just because he had consensual sex with another woman. and they just didn't think it was right. Well, now they realize that there's no jobs, and, you know, gas prices out here right now, I drove by the gas station, they're sitting at $2.49 a gallon just for unleaded out here. So,
yeah, thanks, George.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you're running big combines.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it takes a bunch of diesel to, or even gasoline for the gas-powered ones, because diesel's through the freaking roof, too.
Yeah, and that, you know, every time a farmer fills up, I know he only uses a combine about twice a year, you know. I mean, these are $150,000 machines out here, so, but still, that takes a lot of money when you're doing, you know, 150 acres, 250 acres at a time.
Oh, you know, sure.
Profit. Yeah, definitely. So they're feeling the impact. I mean, there's a lot of unemployed just like anywhere, you know, in the U.S.
I saw a story today, Dookie, that I mean, you're talking about the positive end of things. I saw a story today coming out of Kansas, you know, about the new opt-in system for sex education out there. Did you catch that thing?
Yeah, we caught it. We were one of the first that even saw it. So, you know, I kind of got mixed feelings on that, and maybe that's just me, but, you know, maybe it's the same as, like, you know, the religion in school. I mean, I think parents have a lot to do with the way their children are raised now.
Sure.
If I had a child that went to a school that wanted to, you know, pray all day and learn more about the Bible than they do science, you know, I'd rather give my consent on what the child would learn, because I do feel that parents are a great deal responsible for their children and how they learn, and how they grow up, you know. And, you know, I guess out here we all kind of got the same feeling that it's one thing to be forced to learn a subject or letting your parents learn. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of fundies out here. They're all signing up right now. You know?
Well, the thing is that they've turned it on its head, Dookie. It used to be that if you wanted your kid not to have sex education, you had to opt them out.
Yeah.
But now you have to act. They've made it almost impossible to offer the class because you have to affirmatively opt them into it. And, you know, you don't want anybody to see you signing the dirty paper for your kids.
Well, you wouldn't believe it out here. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people out here that do sign that letter.
Well, I hope they do because, you know, like I've said a couple of times, we got shop class so that kids won't lop an arm or a hand off the first time they pick up the circular saw.
Well, yeah, that is true.
We got driver's ed class so that they won't take out the phone pole the first time they get behind the wheel, but we got a problem having given a kid a sex class so they won't catch a disease and die the first time they do it?
Yeah. That's true. And, you know, same goes for anything. But, you know, right now we live in a generation where these kids know about that stuff, you know, at 10 years old. I mean, I was lucky to even know what, you know, the female parts of the male parts really looked like and what they did until I was really a teenager, you know.
Yeah, I thought those Swedes were selling dirty automobiles, Volvos, for God's sakes. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, I didn't, you know, if it wasn't for my dad's porno stash under his bed, I would have never known a lot of this stuff.
Thank God for dads.
Oh, Dad ruled, you know. And when he passed on, Mom made sure to give me those magazines because I still use them to this day.
Well, bless her heart, you know. And you know, then there's there you know, kids, nephews, you know.
Well, you gotta love the '80s chicks.
Oh know? Man, yeah. the big hair, sure.
Well, the big hair. Well, I don't know what hair are you talking about.
Did you stop that?
Okay, I'll stop that.
Hey, Dookie, thanks so much, brother.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm going to join you guys in the chat room a little later if you log on.
All right, sounds like a lot of fun. Take care now.
Bye.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Our great good friend, Dookie, from WD40.com. That's D-U-B-Y-A, excuse me, D-U-B-Y-A-D-40.com. WD40.com, the best information source on the internet, period, bar none. You want to know what's going on, you go to WD40.com. You'll know what's going on. And you'll also receive the wit and wisdom of Dookie and Clyde and Inside Ed's Head and Schuster's Shtick and even my lovely wife Agnes chiming in now. And Wally. Yeah, I can't leave Wally out. I wouldn't leave Wally and leaving Wally out. Tell you, everybody's a critic. Let's keep it rolling. Let's go back to the phones. Peter's with us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob. I got a laugh out of the big hair comment. You ever spend any time watching the Big Hair Channel?
You know, we haven't gotten it here in the Hills and Hollers yet.
Well, you'll get it one day.
I'm afraid we will.
I wanted to talk about Betty. I remember it's something dash Wright. I forgot the.
Betsy Leander Wright.
That's it. Yes, Betsy Leander Wright. Some of her thoughts, and I've got to tell you, it's all well and good to have studied communications and realize the social baggage that goes along with various words and, that we use. But clearly, Bob, I believe that she's out of her area of experience, and by that, I'm talking about personal experience. Now, you know, I myself live and had lived and have walked with the people that she's talking about addressing, the blue-collar people, uh-huh. all my life. I mean, I like you, I grew up poor in the South. I mean, I live on a dirt road in an old beat-up house, the house I grew up in. She indicated that she said quite clearly, I'm not a Christian. Well, you know, not that that means anything in terms of any political meaning, but, you know, I'm in church every Sunday, and you know, I remember I told you I was in, had problems with drugs for a long time, and
yeah.
You know, I spent a whole year in a faith-based drug rehab. I mean, you know, I was there 24 hours a day. It was an in-house facility. I've been actually locked up with the Assembly of God for an entire year. I know these people. And
I do too. I wasn't locked up with them involuntarily or anything, but I spent a significant portion of my life with them.
Well, sure you have. Sure you have. And she made one point that I had to applaud her on. It was a good point. And that point was that we needed to be careful how we addressed how we talked about Christians. You know, when regardless of what you have to tell them, if you bash Christianity or if you say, you know, those Christians, that's something, they will shut down immediately and not listen to you.
Well, there's truth in that.
Yes, and you do it the correct way. You always qualify the fake Christians or how do you put it, the corporate Christians,
the religion industry.
Religion industry. We always differentiate people of faith versus the religion industry, and you know. These people, as long as you're not bashing Christianity, there's no problem with using, you know, the hallmark of any advanced civilization is an agreed upon vocabulary. And it's not always necessary or even practical to use high English. Clearly, many blue collar people are far more comfortable with everyday language. The word idiot, incompetent, liar, those are words that people get. Now, the only reason they would have a problem hearing those words is simply pride and not wanting to hear, I told you so.
Yeah, darn fool.
Right, exactly, exactly. You know, to me, you know, while the woman was well-researched, I don't think that she fully understood the depth, how we necessarily work.
Well, you know, that, but... Peter, part of that is a 150-year-old problem. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Well, no. Go ahead. Go ahead.
There is a disconnect in this country that has existed since sometime around the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, part of that disconnect is the disconnect between the whites and their subject persons, the African Americans, Indians, what have you. Another part of that disconnect is a disconnect between the what was by then already a mechanizing North and an agrarian South.
I see. Yeah. I see that.
Nobody was more hated in the antebellum South than a elitist abolitionist Yankee.
Well, this is true. The whole carpetbagger thing went down.
Yeah. Right. And it's always a matter of people coming down South. Well, you know. You people don't understand how you need to be doing things because you're a bunch of dumb damn hillbillies.
Well, this is so common. It happens so often when people come down, having lived in the North, they often expect that they're going to sit down and tell you how we do it up there.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, we got
damn how they do it. Up
yeah,
there.
Well, right. I mean, you live in the South. You probably know the joke. There's three kinds of Yankees. There's Yankees, damn Yankees, and goddamn Yankees.
Well,
you know, pardon my dirty mouth, but yeah, I mean, the Yankees come down south and turn around and go home. No, the Yankees live up north. The damn Yankees come down south, turn around and go home. Don't you shake that finger at me, woman. And the GD Yankees come down south and stay.
Right. And they come down south and stay after they retire and vote against raising any kind of taxes to pay for school.
Right. And tell you how bad the roads are.
Yeah, right. And then tell you how bad the roads are. But you know, the thing is my gut feeling about the caller was that she would have been absolutely perfect as one of the carry handlers in 2004. That kind of advice lost Kerry the election. The be nice, the don't use any strong language.
But she
all
was
that is complete bull
stuff. Yeah, but she was disgusted with Kerry. She doesn't like Kerry.
Well, she may not, but I bet you 10-1 she would have given him the be nice advice.
Well, and see that's another thing about the disconnect in this country, Peter. I have talked at length, and some people get it, some people don't, about that little group that I like to call the Stump Licker Bunch. You know, when you're out in the country and it's molasses making time, there's some leftover stuff, and you generally, you know, back in the old South, it would be left in a hollowed out stump, and it would ferment there, and yellow jackets and ants and flies and whatever buzz all over, and it'd ferment all the heck, and you know, you slip out there on a Saturday night, and you get you a couple of dippers full, and next thing you know, you're blind, crazy ass drunk.
Well, that's
and you're mean, and it's mean drunk too.
Yes, it's mean drunk too.
And the Stump Licker Bunch is a gang that I don't think the Kerryites or God bless them, our well-meaning brothers and sisters to the north really understand.
Nope, they don't fully get it, and you don't get anywhere by using a kinder, gentler vocabulary. You have to say it in kind.
Yeah, and because when you're sitting there being kinder and gentler, you're looking down and, I mean, dang, there's a pearl-handled knife sticking out from betwixt my ribs. What'd you want to go and do that for? And the Stump Licker Bunch standing there laughing.
Right. And sarcasm works. You know, Bush has been elected, well, has stolen the election a second time. How's that working out for you so far?
That's real good for you, ain't it?
Yeah, right. But you know, there's no harm in calling a spade as we say it. It just has to be done. We are literally at war. We are dealing with the masters of spin, and it is high time that we came out using the common man's vocabulary and stopped this mess about he misspoke or he clarified. The damn man lied.
he's lying again, Mabel. You know, right.
Lied has a real resonant impact with people.
And there's
all the other words are meaningless. They go in one ear and out the other.
And well, you know, and that's the thing with I mean, that's why we try to sort of aim our little internet antenna to the south, and we get, you know, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people saying, you know, I didn't know that there was that kind of good common sense in the South anymore.
Right. Right.
But, you know, more than anything, Southerners who routinely, year in, year out, decade in, decade out, century in, century out, we are the poorest people in the country.
Well, Bob, I didn't know I was poor until I got older because everybody around me was poor.
Right.
We were all the same.
You know,
I had no clue we were poor until I started going to, you know, the little school out here in the country closed. I started going to school in Tallahassee.
But when
you're rich people.
Right. But when you're poor, all you've got is your honesty.
Well, this is true. This is true.
And if so-called northern liberals or northern elitists put off Southerners, it's because it feels like a challenge to their credibility.
Well, you know, just don't even bother try to tell me how to talk to blue collar, baby. I have lived it all my life.
Right.
I know how to speak to them. And she had one very good point, and I'll say it again, and that is not is that we can't do Christian bashing because they will shut down instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm one of them. And that's one of the things that offends me about some of the other shows. It isn't often – not everyone differentiates it. And I despise it that it has to be differentiated between
the real Christians and the fake Christians. I mean, the words almost become meaningless.
Well, and there's kind of a snobbery in it, in that all by itself, Peter, and I'm guilty of it. You know, the fact that I would stand here and I would judge that, you know, Jerry Falwell, you're going to hell, but Jim Wallace, you're not. You know, but I feel like I have to do that based upon what I learned growing up.
Well, you're pointing out the facts, and it's got to be done, and it has to be done using real words and clear vocabulary. Nothing wrong with that. Don't worry about social baggage that goes along with various words. We get what the various words mean. No one's thinking that you're calling them an idiot because you're calling Bush an idiot. The only way they think you're calling them an idiot is if you say, "You're an idiot
for voting for Bush."
Theology down here. We understand sentence structure, for crying out loud. Get me a break, woman.
got that part worked out. But the other thing I think that is not gotten in this, you know, she was amazed, bless her heart. She was amazed to hear the story of the John Kerry knife in the Bible thing, and that was real.
The lukewarm bit, that was the thing.
The business where, I mean, what the Republicans did to John Kerry in West Virginia and Arkansas. That's the only...
Oh, the knife in the Bible, yes.
Yeah, the pamphlet. John Kerry going to get your Bible.
Yeah, going to come take your Bible. That's the kind of people that we're dealing with, and, you know, you just have to differentiate. The only thing, you just have to differentiate between the two if you're going to get them to listen.
And but the other thing is, I don't think it's unfair in that circumstance when they are coming at you and they start it. You know, I'm a real big peace guy. Don't want to run around starting any fights. But when somebody takes a swing at me, I reserve the right to channel my inner redneck and finish the darn thing.
My inner redneck. God, I love those people.
And,
yeah.
And but I mean, because that's the only way you can do it. You know, when they come at you, I mean, Chan Chandler in the East Waynesville Baptist Church in North Carolina, excommunicating members of his church, deacons, for God's sakes,
yes,
for voting for John Kerry.
Yes, yes, I
those people, those people are firing the first shots, and we've got every right in the world to come back and, you know,
right,
ye generation of vipers, and whoop out a few of the really good Bible verses on them,
right,
and then
right, there's no harm in you know, calling the people traitors and idiots and liars. I mean, if it's true, because you just have to speak the truth, because it just, you won't get anywhere unless you don't.
But I do love that. That Bush vote you cast through, that working out good for you?
Yeah, well, actually, someone said something similar to that in the chat room earlier tonight, and I had used that line in the past, so I'd forgotten about it, and I got a big laugh, but it might have been pissed.
That's okay. That's his name.
In the chat room. I think maybe made a reference about, how's that working out for you tonight, which feeds that back into my memory. Thank you for that. But it's a marvelous line. But, yeah, we get it down here.
But some of that's going to have to be figured out, because, you know, there were a lot of people who thought John Kerry was just the finest thing since sliced bread. I wasn't one of them. Now, I defended him. You know, when you come at a guy with a couple of bronze stars and a few pieces of shrapnel in his butt, and you call him a coward, I'm going to identify him with him as just a Democrat and an American. And I'm going to defend that. But, you know, bless his horse-faced self.
Well,
you know,
I reserve the right to speak to my peers as I choose. They're my peers. They're not her peers.
Well, right. Absolutely. Now, on the other hand, she's doing good work out there.
Absolutely.
With FairEconomy.org, they're aiming at all the stuff that we believe in. But I don't think you can have a uniform, you know, because we keep talking about that. It's so important on this program, Peter, the conversation we have to have with America. You know, Al Franken is doing a lovely job having a conversation with Minnesota and up east.
Well,
and I like Al's humor. Loved him on Saturday Night Live. I don't, you know, is he reaching the South?
Doesn't connect with me at all. Doesn't connect with me at all.
You know,
there are several other hosts that simply do not resonate with me that other people enjoy immensely. And I guess it's because they're peers. I guess it's because they connect on some level that we never will.
I feel bad for my brothers and sisters in the South, Peter, because the Democratic Party completely ignored them. Bless Howard Dean's heart. He's got Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid mattering an old wet hen at him because he wants to have a 50-state strategy. And he wants to go into Mississippi, and he wants to go into Alabama, and he wants to be in the panhandle of Florida, and he wants to go into the red clay roads of Georgia, and he wants to have that conversation, and I want to have that conversation, and nobody on our side of it is trying, you know, on a broadcast level, is trying to have that conversation with the South, because there's been a lot of assumptions made that the South ain't worth having the conversation with, and I cannot accept that.
Well, I can't either, and the conversation will never happen with the type of language that she's recommending. It's just not going to work.
That dog won't hunt.
No, that's a wonderful line. No, that dog won't hunt. anyway, you know, God bless her. She's doing what she needs to do. It just doesn't work. Not right here. Not right now. But we're clearly in a state of war for the heart of this country, for the soul of this country, and for the heart and soul of the church.
Yeah.
We're at war for both of those things.
Because they went to war for the heart and soul of the church about 20 years ago.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you've pointed out a couple of the organizations that exist out there for that express purpose.
Yes, government organizations, I might add.
Yeah, and as a consequence of, you know, and well, now, see, I think, Peter, and I hope I'm not taking up too much of your time, because you've really opened up a whole great big thing. some of what she is saying is very much valid, because, and it goes back to some of what I've been saying, this liberal elitism that she's talking about. That liberal elite is the liberal elite that is more than happy to let me and Joe Vecchio and Guy James and frankly Air America, Ben Birch, Bruce Birch, John Fox, Bart Kopp, Buzz Flash, the WD40.com, they are more than happy to let us carry the water, and they feel no inclination whatsoever to do the right thing by us.
You are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. And clearly, any number of those people could write a check tomorrow to lighten the load and make things go smoothly, but they're just not choosing.
Well, let's get down with our Southern selves again. Why in God's name would they want to buy the cow when they already getting the milk for free?
Well, this is true, but I've got to tell you, I'm so far to the left that if I were any further to the left, I'd fall off the edge of the planet. But I'm damn sure not elite.
Right. I got no time for elite. You know, it blows my mind that there's anybody out there that the Queen of England. You know, I can't conceptualize a monarch. I can't conceptualize a president that is afraid of the people of the United States. That, you know, now there's your elitism.
Oh yes, the whole free speech zones. That's the mark of elitism. That I could even control your free speech. That it's outrageous.
Because you know the business of being alive, Peter, it's dusty and it's gritty and it's grimy and it's fun and it's beautiful and sometimes it's mean and it's heartbreaking. We got heartbreak by the bushel basketful in Iraq.
Well, this is true.
But you got to get down and you got to take it all in.
Right.
Or it's not going to mean anything, you know, because you're 90 years old and you're laying there on your silken sheets and what was it worth? What'd you do? Whose life did you change?
Right. Well, the working class is going to become more and more open to the things we're talking about. We're about to enter what's called peak driving season, the summer month.
Yeah.
Gasoline's going to go through the roof, mm-hmm. and if that's any harbinger or any indicator of being open to the fact that Bush is an idiot, I don't know what else will.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I just opened an email here, Peter, and I'm going to share it with you because I know it's going to speak to you. Subject. This is from the same people that send me interview opportunities with the woman who writes books about Hillary being in her kid's dirty underwear hamper.
Yes. Help, Hillary's under my bed or some rigmarole.
Yeah, right. National, and the subject line, National Day of Prayer, interview opportunity. May 4th, 2006, with the threat of bird flu mutating and killing millions, the looming possibility of another major terrorist attack, and general instability worldwide today, it might be a good time to pray.
Oh, really?
The National Day of Prayer is coming up on May 4th, 2006. You know, I got news for these clowns, Peter. Everybody praying on one day ain't going to cut it.
Well, the National Day of Prayer is been whored out completely. And it's just an excuse for the churches to put eagles and American flags in the front of the up front next to the Christian flag.
Yeah, they want time and time again. Yeah, they want me to interview a dude who has written the Prayer of Jehoshaphat for America.
Okay.
You know, and the thing is, I reserve the right. You know, I liked a lot of what Betsy said. But I'd like to take her to a diner outside Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and let her see the South.
Clearly, Bob, you do not disrespect a woman, and neither do I. It's just that she is just not operating in her area of experience here. She's just not
right. And I'm probably not worth a tinker's dam up east.
Well, I know I wouldn't be. I would have no clue.
I'd spend all my time with people. And why do you talk like that?
This is true.
I mean, I went out to Missouri for college, and I had people believing that I was wearing my first pair of shoes. And that's Missouri.
I know. And, you know, it's all because they've seen too many episodes of Dukes of Hazzard.
And Beverly Hillbillies. But the thing is, they never, in the Beverly Hillbillies or the Dukes of Hazzard or Green Acres, they never got it. The hillbillies, the hicks, always wind up being the smart ones.
They never got it, did they? That is such a good point. It always went right over their heads.
I mean, I know, I've got Southern friends who just, you know, cringe and recoil at the very mention of the Beverly Hillbillies.
Well, now that's interesting. That's interesting.
Because
the Mayberry bit was just as bad, except it was all sweetness and light, but just as stupid.
Yeah, but the thing is, people. Yeah, look at them funny rednecks. The funny rednecks always win. And guess what? Right now, the funny rednecks are winning in politics too. Only thing is, they're winning with a politics that is absolutely going to kill this country.
Well, that's a very good point. Funny rednecks all dressed up as suit and tie. Well, they're moneyed people, but they're pretending to be.
Yeah.
Your average Joe. I overheard soon after the 2004 election, someone who voted for Bush, someone said, well, at least he prays. You know.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's just such a fundamental thing that the thing about the Christianity, I mean, they'll fall for anything. But hopefully this is going to be a huge eye-opener for all of the people who believe anyone who says that they are operating in the spirit of Christ.
Yeah.
I sure hope so.
Well, I do too. Peter, but, thanks so much for a great conversation.
Well, you know, I guess they got an earful. God help us. I have to go back and face them in the chat room. I love you.
Yeah, but there's a lot of fun to be had in the chat room.
Okay.
All right, you take care, Peter.
Good night.
Bye now. And, you know, if you get a chance, wander by the Tom Hartman's chat room. Tom Hartman, that's Tom with an H and Hartman with two N's, .com. Jump on in there. It's mighty, mighty, mighty kind of Tom to... Let us use it during the off hours of his program. That's it for tonight. As if it wasn't enough. The show was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Our engineers are Andy Kerbway. Ben Birch of WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream of this program to which you are listening now or will be listening later, as well as the archives of this show and many, many other fine liberal talk programs. Got a fundraiser going on. Do the right thing. Ben's not going to send you a bill. You're going to have to send him a check. Okay? Our good friend Joe Vecchio at cupofjoe.blogspot.com, probably among the most sharp, incisive bloggers on the internet. He's got a fundraiser going on.